Welcome to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Thursday afternoon from our old studios here in the American Journal Studios, the InfoWars headquarters. Feels good. Feels good to be back in the saddle. I was out yesterday, of course, doing a debate, a generational debate. It's myself and Owen Schroyer and Alex Stein facing off against three boomers. And it was a very interesting experience. I'll tell you about it in the next segment. But we have a lot to talk about. Obviously, the Iran war is going to take up a lot of time, but we have a lot of other stories to get into, including a lot about immigration and the continued attempt to enslave us all in a digital prison, of course, accelerated and made all the more imminent by the war in Iran. But we'll begin today, as we do every day, with our Daily Dispatch. Here it is, folks, your Daily Dispatch for Thursday, the 26th of March, 2026. Trump says Iran's present to the U.S. was allowing 10 oil tankers through Hormuz. Donald Trump said on Thursday that Iran was letting 10 oil tankers transit the Strait of Hormuz as an apparent goodwill gesture in negotiations. Trump made the comments at a cabinet meeting in the White House, elaborating on what had previously been described as just a present from Iran. They said, to show you the fact that we're real and solid, that we're there, we're going to let you have eight boats of oil, eight big boats of oil, Trump said. I guess they were right. They were real, and I think they were Pakistani flag. It ended up being 10 boats. So Trump was saying they gave us a big present yesterday, and apparently it was allowing ships to pass through. Which, again, it's like, you know, before the war, ships could just pass through whenever they wanted. It was amazing. It was great. It was crazy. I just love that our victories, our successes now are just a moderate and temporary return to the status quo pre-war. Anyway, U.S. links security guarantees to Ukraine giving up Donbass, Zelensky says. The U.S. has offered security guarantees if Iran hands the Donbass region to Russia, Zelensky says. The Ukrainian leader says abandoning defensive line in Donbass would be a major security risk. Zelensky thanks Trump for continuing U.S. weapon supplies to Ukraine despite the Iran conflict. Ukraine's advances in missile and drone production allow it to retaliate against Russian airstrikes. And actually, we are moving defensive systems out of Ukraine now. We'll get to that in just a little bit. But Iran destroyed all of our systems in the Middle East, so we're having to get them from elsewhere. And it turns out we don't actually care that much about Ukraine. Sort of a convenient sideshow for us, but clearly not the priority at this point. Give up Donbass. Let's have peace. It's been 4 years at this point, and you've been losing the entire time. So let's cut our losses. You tried. You failed. Throw Zelensky and all of his friends in prison, and let's just move on. Meanwhile, Iran rejects U.S. 15-point ceasefire plan, issues its own demands as strikes land across the Mideast. On Wednesday, Iran's Qatem al And by a central headquarters spokesman publicly rejected a 15-point U.S. ceasefire proposal, taunting Washington in English, saying people like us can never get along with people like you. Pakistani intermediaries conveyed the U.S. plan on Tuesday, addressing sanctions relief, nuclear rollback, missile limits, and reopening the Strait of Hormuz. But an unnamed Iranian official dismissed it as excessive and disconnected from reality on the battlefield. They instead issued back a 5-point non-negotiable conditional agreement, including a complete halt to, quote, aggression and assassinations, guaranteed war reparations, and international recognition of Iran's sovereignty over the Strait of Hormuz, declaring no negotiations will be held prior to accepting all demands. The Pentagon is deploying at least 1,000 troops from the 82nd Airborne Division and approximately 5,000 Marines to the Middle East in the coming days, while Iran's death toll passes 1,500 and a drone strike ignites a major fire at Kuwait International Airport. Again, we're just watching in real time as the Iran war spirals out of control and just gets worse and worse. And the consequences are predictable. Democrats win in Mar-a-Lago District. Ominous for Republicans. Yes, the Democrats are sweeping. Basically, every election is being held recently for good reason.
What's this?
Oh, I've got Power Plant. Oh, what's this?
I've got Methyl Drive, the two ingredients in the Power Drive bundle, which is available at thealexjonesstore.com. Take them. Pure power, pure energy, raise testosterone, improve mitochondrial function, methylation genes in enzymatic processes throughout the body. Pairs perfectly, absolutely perfectly with Methylene Blue. These are the two products made to work in conjunction together with Methylene Blue. I made them, I developed them, high quality mineral blends, methylation blends, adaptogenic herbs, functional mushrooms, and the CoQ10, the PQQ. What you want for metabolic health and mitochondrial function. I want you to win today. I want you to succeed. Take out the enemy. Choose freedom.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. I'm coming to you live from the American Journal studio here in Austin, Texas, InfoWars headquarters. Things are a little bit crazy here behind the scenes, but we're making it work. And of course, yesterday, I was not in the office. I was doing a debate with our old friend Owen Schroyer and Alex Stein. Those guys were on my team, and we were facing off against a couple of boomers, three boomers, and it was a great debate. I'm very excited for it to come out. It was with Brandon Straka and the Walk Away movement. And I think it'll be released next week. I'm very excited for it to come out. It was very fun. And it was funny because for about half of the debate, the conversation, we're pretty much aligned with the boomers. Not a lot of disagreement. But all that changed when the topic of Israel came up. And holy goodness, y'all. We have got to get through to the boomers about Israel. It's not good. It's not good. I don't want to spoil anything from the debate. But I will. But I'm going to, because you deserve it. They think that we found WMDs in Iraq. It's just like, I'm just going to let that sink in for a second. Like, we were asked about the Iraq war, and all three boomers were like, well, we found there were WMDs. And we all looked at each other and we're just like, what? What are you talking about? What are you talking about? This is crazy. That's a crazy thing to think. So like, that's the situation that we're in. I don't get it. Again, you know, respect to the boomers we were arguing against. You know, they were great most of the time. It's just when it comes to Israel and Islam, I'm telling you, there's something not quite right there, because even taking the premise and accepting the premise of Islam is evil and basically they want to kill everybody, and so any military action against Islam is justifiable. Like, even taking that premise and looking at our actions in the Middle East over the last two decades, three decades, or over the last year, is it stopping Islam? Is it hurting the Islamic movement? Is it reversing the tide of Islamic immigration into Europe or America? Or is it directly contributing to that? Like, this is what I don't understand. If your goal is to somehow, you know, damage Islam as a thing, which, you know, one of the guys on the other team, he was very much motivated by that, by just sort of a you know, base opposition to Islam as a religion. If that is your stance, like, is it going well? How's it going? Was this a good idea? And like, this is the crazy part. They're basically in favor of everything America's done in the Middle East over the last couple of decades. Again, I can't even possibly fathom how you could look back the last three decades of American foreign policy and be like, yep, we nailed it. We did it. Absolutely. It's like, okay, I guess. But especially something like Muammar Gaddafi. It might be like the best sort of example in talking about how we got to Iran. What happened with Muammar Gaddafi? He had a nuclear weapons program that he willingly gave up because he was asked to by the United States and others, demanded to, right? He agreed to it. How did that end up for him? He ended up sodomized to death by his own people. That's a lesson. Do you think Iran is going to give up nukes now? Do you think when they see what happens when America gives guarantees and says, hey, you know, you don't have to have nukes. You don't need nukes for anything. All right. We got you. We'll make sure nobody messes with you. Just give up your nukes. They give up the nukes and suddenly they're overthrown and their country is completely devastated. And it opens up the floodgate for Muslim immigration into Europe. So it's like, okay, the killing of Muammar Gaddafi directly led to the mass influx of Islam into Europe to the point where they're taking it over. And the other guy would be like, yep, yeah, that's what happened. And it's like, so that was a bad thing. He's like, no, it was a good thing. It's like, what are you talking? Like, there is this weird, just like, I don't know if they're just motivated by pure blinding rage. Just when they think about Islam, it just like blinds them to reality. It's like, okay, even if your whole goal is to destroy Islam or prevent Islam's takeover of the West, why are you supporting the very actions that have led to the Islamic takeover? Why are you promoting the very extremists that got this ball rolling in the first place? And if the whole point of us attacking Iran is because they're Muslim, like, that doesn't make any sense because we're best friends with the more extremist Muslims in the area. In Syria, you had Bashar al-Assad as an Alawite protecting the minority groups. He gets taken out for exactly the same reasons that we take out Iran. He's replaced with al-Jalani. They're killing the Druze to the point that Israel is bombing their capital city to stop them from killing the minority groups. And it's like, so we've replaced the big bad Muslim guy, Bashar al-Assad, with a worse Muslim guy. And this is good because you hate Muslims. What are you talking about? What is going on here? I really don't understand. Like, first of all, I don't understand the motivation because I don't know what Iran has done to us. I don't know what Iran's big, you know, what their threat is that they pose to us. It doesn't exist as far as I'm concerned. And any degree to which it does exist, it's because of our continuous antagonization of them. I mean, what? Okay. But even if I agreed with it, it's like what we're doing is diametrically opposed to the outcome that you desire. So why do you keep doing it? I don't understand. It's not that complicated. It's not that hard to figure out. But there's something about, I genuinely don't know. Like, there's another part where I was saying that Al-Khamenei, who they killed, the supreme leader, you know, run Iran forever. I said, you know, he's been killed. Now he's been replaced by a less moderate person. He was a moderate compared to who replaces him. And then we got in this argument where it was a guy like, you're saying that he's like, you say that Khamenei is a moderate? I kept saying, no, in comparison to who replaces him. Yes, there's like a scale, there's a gradation, there's a spectrum of radicalization, extremism, and you can be farther down the line on that. But it was like, it didn't matter. It was like, nope. It's impossible to be more radical than Khamenei is, so it doesn't matter who comes after him. Like, that's not true. Like, I just don't get it. What are we talking about? We have directly now given Iran over to the more extreme people in Iran and proven to them that they can't talk to us, that we can't be trusted, that they can't make a peace deal or a ceasefire with us. And then we have this. There is a sinister new power in Iran, and it's not who the West thinks. In the past month, the U.S. and Israel eliminated the most senior ranking officials in the Islamic Republic, including Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, Majtaba, the Ali Khamenei's son, who's now formally succeeded his father as Supreme Leader, was also targeted, but reportedly narrowly survived. Despite incurring significant losses, there is still a high degree of coordination between the government and bureaucracy, military and intelligence apparatus, the three pillars upholding the Islamic Republic. Against this backdrop and reports that Washington Post has been that Washington has been negotiating with the real power broker in the regime, Washington policy circles have concluded that a new strongman has emerged in Tehran. All attention has turned to the obvious contender, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, speaker of the Iranian parliament and veteran of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the regime's ideological military force. But in Iran, the obvious answer is rarely the correct one. While the egotistical Ghalibaf has played into the limelight, a far more powerful figure is likely silently pulling the strings. Ahmed Vahidi, the new IRGC commander in chief, who is a Khamenei absolutist. Unlike Ghalibaf, Vahidi has remained in the shadows since the war. This is not without reason. Our analysis suggests he is likely to be operating as the key cog in the regime's chain of command, and his survival is essential to its continuity. Long before the war, Ali Khamenei had entrusted Vahidi to draw up plans to further militarize the regime. If he outlasts this conflict and the regime survives, he will be able to implement his vision, a design that will produce a far more radical and extreme Islamic Republic. Again, I ask you, okay. You're motivated by this hatred of Islam. You think they all want to kill you. Why do you keep supporting the thing that empowers your enemies? Why do you keep cheering for the very actions that have exposed us to the danger that you say you're fighting? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense. And I also hate to say it, they just don't know what Israel's up to. They were, you know, perfectly aware that and you know, stuck to the modern talking point that the quote-unquote West Bank is actually quote-unquote Judea and Samaria. And this is a new, fairly new development. It was always just called the West Bank. I'm sure there were people the whole time calling it Judea and Samaria. But it's just a recent development that it's coming into public, like, common usage, calling it Judea and Samaria. I think actually it was a official name change by Israel. But it's like, so I said, well, do you know what Israel's doing in the West Bank? He said, well, Judea and Samaria. I said, oh, well, okay, or the West Bank, whatever. Do you know what's happening there? Said, well, you know, Judea and Samaria is the traditional historical name for it. But do you know what's happening there? He's just like, no. Okay, they're burning Christian villages there. Do you not know this? Like, they don't know this. They have no idea. Never heard of Taiba. So it's like, okay. If you look at somebody like me, who, you know, we have this hour-long conversation or more, you know I'm you can tell I'm intelligent, you can tell I'm thoughtful, you can tell I'm not a liar, like, you should be able to tell all of this, I would think, from a conversation with me. And then when you hear that I really, really, really dislike Israel, like, strongly, strongly dislike the Israeli state and all of their actions, I don't know, maybe you think, like, hey, maybe he's got a reason for that. Maybe there's, like, something that's happening that I'm not aware of, and if I was aware of it, I too would not like Israel as much. Somehow, it's like everything gets flipped when it comes to Israel. And people who are very reasonable and conscientious and thoughtful, just, it just all goes out the window. And that really is, like, the biggest struggle I think we have to face right here. Because it feeds into everything else. Because if you don't understand that the objections to Israel are well-founded, factual, based off of observation and historical precedent and just a genuine, you know, care for other people, like, it's not a conspiracy, it's not hate, it's genuine. But if you don't think that it is, if you just think it's all come from hate or whatever, then downstream, everything else they believe must also be, you know, it's insane and ridiculous. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm just, like, trying to wrestle with it. It's like, I don't know how we get through. I don't know how we get through if you can't even acknowledge, like, the stuff that's happening. You don't know what's actually happening. You know, you feel like you're an authority on the matter. It's very strange. Something else I was going to say about this. But basically, it's the reason that we're going to lose the midterms. I mean, it's not complicated. It is the reason that we're going to lose the midterms. And that is sort of the downstream effect. Is it's like, oh, it's your fault we're going to lose the midterms because you're just this crazy anti-Israel person. You can't see all the success that we're having. So you've broken from MAGA. Now you're undermining us. And it's like, no, you don't understand what's actually happening here. You don't understand what's actually at stake, and you don't understand the genuine and well-founded outrage and fury that you are inspiring in Americans of all stripes. I think it's going to come out in the election. I hope it does. Because right now, something like the Florida race between Fishback and Byron Donalds just got that coveted Ben Shapiro endorsement. So I'm sure that's going to go very far. They both uploaded videos to Facebook, the Fishback campaign and the Byron Donald's campaign. Byron Donald's got 88 likes total on his post, and the James Fishback account had like tens of thousands. So, I mean, you look at the internet, when you talk to people on the street, everybody I know, everybody who's tuned in or not tuned in, I mean, everybody is just like, screw Israel. Like, what is this? Why are we doing this? Except for Republican boomers. They're the only ones who still just buy hook, line, and sinker every lie that comes out of Israel. And it is something to behold, I'll tell you that. So I enjoyed our conversation. Like, it was interesting. But it was also just so bizarre. Just like, what are we talking about here? It was fascinating. You're going to have to watch it. And some of the stuff I'm describing here is on the video. Some of it was sort of, you know, behind the scenes. I just don't get what I guess what it is like, we have to just decide, like, do we actually care about anything? Like, does any of this stuff actually matter, or is it all just an excuse? Like, none of it's real. Like, do you actually care that Iran are crazy extremists and, you know, want to kill people that aren't in their religion? And if so, can you apply that same metric to Israel? If not, there's a problem there. Do we care about betraying our word when we make agreements and then assassinate the people that are supposed to be negotiating with us? Like, does that matter? I think it matters. I think it matters if you're bombing 84-86% civilians and a much smaller number of actual combatants being hit. I think that matters. Like, I think it matters morally. I think it matters. And you can't just say, well, it's war, so it doesn't matter. Of course it matters. Obviously, it matters. Like, the reason we go to war is predicated on these types of outrages, and yet during war, the outrages don't matter anymore. It doesn't make any sense. Does this stuff matter? Does it matter that we're honest? Does it matter that the news that we get is truthful? Or is it fine that it's a lie because it's the propaganda that we need to get what we want? Because that's how I feel like the boomers are. Is just like, well, maybe it's not true, but it lets us go to war with Iran, and that's what I want, so I'm going to say it's true. I guess maybe it just doesn't matter. Maybe none of this matters. I think it does. I think it does, because if the whole reason that we're going to war in the Middle East is predicated on the preservation of Western culture, we have to define what Western culture is. And when you define Western culture, in my mind, you fall to basic fundamental moral beliefs that exist in Europe and America, but do not exist in Israel. We do not believe in collective punishment in the West. We do not believe in, well, we believe in free speech in America. We used to believe it in Europe. Free speech actually originated in Europe, things like the Magna Carta. We just, you know, expanded and codified it into law. Does that matter? I mean, does it matter that the Israeli government does not believe in free speech? Does it matter that they do believe in collective punishment? Does it matter that they are ethnic supremacists? Like, does that matter? I don't know. I think it matters. I especially think it matters if it's those very characteristics that we are predicating our war on Iran on, if our greatest ally in the region also exhibits those same characteristics. I think that matters. And there's a just glaring hypocrisy, inconsistency, or to irony at play here. And I think boomers just need to sit and think about it for maybe just a little while. Just a few minutes, I think, would be enough. And of course, the really absurd thing is that anything you have to say about Iran does not apply to a place like Lebanon, but that's going ahead anyway. The war in Iran is just getting worse. Obviously, they're rolling out the Agenda 2030 lockdown program all over us, all over again. And luckily, we'll be able to see what they're doing and possibly resist better this time. But at the same time, they're not asking us to voluntarily lock down. They're talking about fuel shortages that they'll create if they don't exist naturally. So I want to go to a couple videos about this, actually. And guys, I don't think I ever got a video list. If I can grab a video list, that would be useful. Let's go to clip 47 here first. This is Trump contradicting himself almost immediately But I guess that's just, you know, everything that we're talking about. Like, I guess this is the type of stuff you have to learn to live with. We have to learn to accept 2 + 2 = 5. And everything is true and nothing is true at the same time. You just have to believe whatever they're saying at the moment, even if it's contradicted by what they say the next moment. It's up to you to comport yourself with that. Doesn't make any sense. You'll see what I mean when we watch this clip. Here's Donald Trump.
Their Navy, we knocked out everything. It's amazing. We have the greatest military. We make the greatest military equipment. And now, if you notice, I said, you got to make it faster. Got to make more of it because we need it. All made in America, but we make the greatest. You know, we had an attack. 100 missiles were shot by Iran at a very important thing that we had. I won't tell you what it was for certain reasons. 100 missiles going 2,000 miles an hour were coming at this element of importance, tremendous power and importance. And of the 100 missiles coming at us, 100 missiles were immediately shot down, shot out of the air, fall into the sea. Think of it. Not.
Okay. So that doesn't make any sense. He just said, I don't think I saw a cut there. I don't know. I wouldn't watch it very closely, but did he not just say we hit everything? We took everything out. We totally knocked them offline. We destroyed their Navy. We destroyed their everything. And they fired 100 missiles at us. Are you seeing an inconsistency? Am I the crazy one here, or is this imminently noticeable to everybody who's paying attention? The man just said we knocked everything out. We destroyed everything. And then they fired 100 missiles at us. Okay, well, one of those isn't true, I guess. I guess either they didn't fire 100 missiles or you didn't knock anything out. I'm going to assume that you didn't knock anything out because they probably did fire 100 missiles at you. But it just doesn't make any sense. Why can people not see this? Why can people not recognize what's going on here? I'll go to more videos on the other side. From all sorts of sources, J.D. Vance, Steve Witkoff. I just think the White House is just lying continuously. I think the real situation is that they are begging Iran for negotiations, and Iran is saying no thank you and, you know, continuing the war. And with every assassination we carry out, the prospect of a negotiated ceasefire becomes that, you know, less certain. And seems like at this point, and I'll show you some of the evidence pointing to it, that we'll be getting boots on the ground very, very shortly, probably this weekend. Because what they're saying is that, you know, there might be a ceasefire. Actually, I think we're going to hold off. I think we're actually pretty close to peace, which, of course, when you're people that you're talking about are just relentless liars, I think we can take the opposite of that. I think any attempt to claim that our side is slowing down is just an obvious attempt to create a false sense of security in Iran before we hit them really heavily. And I really hope Iran is not falling for these obvious lies. So the obvious lies continue. I'll tell you all about them on the other side, where this goes from here. But for the love of God, guys, no matter what your priorities are, there's no way this is good for anybody.
Ladies and gentlemen, this broadcast is funded by you. I am not funded by the Israelis, the Russians, the Iranians, the Qataris, the Democrats, the Republicans, any NGOs, any of that. I'm funded by the few sponsors we have that are amazing, like Kirk Elliott Precious Metals, and our supplements, t-shirts, great knives, you name it. Everything we sell is something I think's cool, that I think's great, that works really well. And I'm here to tell you, folks, that supplements are one of the fastest growing industries the last 30 years. Go to Whole Foods, go anywhere, it's like it just gets bigger and bigger because they work. There's a lot of great stuff at Whole Foods or GNC. But what we sell is the creme de la creme at prices way lower than you can get the exact same thing at Whole Foods, because most of what we have is just private label of already a top brand. I don't reinvent the wheel. When something's got top ratings, totally tested, 5 stars, we can private label it. Baby, we just slap our name on it and sell it to you at a discount. But some of the stuff, like T3, is the only true atomic iodine. And I didn't mean it's radioactive. It's on the atomic table. It's the good halogen, the opposite of fluoride. You have to have a DEA license to manufacture this. Nobody does it but us. It takes up to 8 weeks to make it. It's made in Arizona. This is the same as X2, but even stronger. It's a patented process. T3 iodine is now available at thealogenstore.com. And we have a flash sale that's only going until tomorrow night at midnight Central Time. 1 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Mountain, 10 p.m. Pacific. And that is the two awesome vehicles. One of the offers is ending. The new one started this week. So you can get put in to the raffle 500 entries. Excuse me. You can put in 100 entries. There are only just 5 entries for everything you buy in the store each time. For the raffle to be able to get the Ford Mustang Shelby GT500 and the 2025 Ford Raptor plus $20,000 in cash. Normally, each thing you buy, each time you're in the store, you get 5x entry into the lottery. This to the raffle, this is 100x until midnight Central tomorrow. So take advantage of that. But even cooler is the backpack Faraday bag. They only got a limited number of these 5-6 months ago. They sold out in one day. They got a lot more this time, but it's still a limited run. I bet this is sold out in less than a week. It is a beautiful backpack with all these inner pockets and zippers. And it's just amazing. I bought a similar bag for over $500 years ago. This is amazing. It protects your phones, your laptops, your iPads from being tracked. When you don't have them in these, everywhere you go, you're being tracked by private corporations, criminals, government, you name it. Plus, if there's an EMP blast, you name it, it protects what you've got. So you want to keep stuff in your house that you'll save from that. It's also great to do that. And it comes with a whole bunch of free gifts inside of it. Because these bags are usually, you know, over $500. It's a $600 value. You get it for $249 if you're a VIP member, $199. And you get an America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife, America First Limited Edition T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Brain Boosters, and Immune Boosting Shilajit Gummies and Capsules, CMOS Gummies and Capsules. That's two bottles each. War Cry Premium Smelling Salts and so much more in the bag. Get it now at TheOliveShowStore.com and keep us on the air. Plus, these are great products.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
I could have called this one.
No.
Yeah.
Is it our fault? Is it because we were bad?
No, that's the main thing that Robert and I talked about is that we did not want you two to blame yourselves.
Whose fault is it?
Let's cut this. It is directly your fault. It is absolutely 150% your fault.
Of course it's their fault. They're the two biggest dickheads in the world, and they're living in your house.
Garrett.
I'm sorry, but they're...
Please don't cry like that. Please don't, Brennan.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much how it goes. They pretty much nailed it there. What it's like. Trying to talk about this stuff. Again, it's just crazy. I'm just looking at all the stories about how the GOP is just being wiped out. We're just going to lose the midterms. Like, it's just crazy. It's crazy where we've gotten ourselves recently. I guess I'll just stick to the Iran war for now. I have so much other stuff to talk about, but like this is just clearly, this is the story that we need to be covering. The bombing continues and everything is getting worse, perfectly on schedule. Israeli chief of staff warns that Israeli forces are, quote, on course of collapse as the mental strain of actually being bombed for once has Israelis on the knife's edge. There's a couple stories about that. Helium shortage has started impacting tech supply chains, execs say, as helium is produced in the Middle East and export out. You know, the panhandle of Texas used to produce 98% of all of the world's helium. I guess not anymore. Pentagon prepares for a massive final blow of Iran war. So apparently they're working up some big attack that'll finally win the war once and for all. What one war looks like, we don't even know. I guess they're just going to nuke Iran and we'll declare victory and just leave it a hollowed out shell of chaos and extremism. Well done. Why Trump only has a month left to end the war? Because the world will be destroyed if he doesn't. International law is on Iran's side, so why is the UNSC blaming the victim? Because it doesn't matter. We're learning that none of it actually matters. So that's what we're being forced to learn. Strait of Hormuz shock, how a war at sea threatens the petrodollar order, which this could all be in service of the design plan to bring about, you know, central bank digital currencies. As we've said over and over, war, and specifically world war, only accelerates everything that the globalists want to do anyway. It only gives them the excuse to do the censorship and the surveillance and the control that they've always wanted. It's all that much more convenient when you have a world war to predicate it all on. Then you've got a pair of stories here, which are both hilarious. The first one is an opinion piece from the Washington Post. I think the change of the title. The title now says, "Don't blame Trump's Iran war on Israel." I believe originally it said, "Don't blame Trump's stupid Iran war, dumb Iran war." There's some word like that in it, which is very funny to me. This is written by Max Boot, and it's just like these Israeli Americans just like, go to war with Iran. You have to go to war with Iran. For 40 years, they're jabbing us in the ribs and telling us, demanding that we go to war in Iran, and we go to war in Iran. And within 3 weeks, it's, wow, these Americans are such idiots for starting this war in Iran. I can't believe they would do this to us. These stupid Americans, this dumb war that they started. Don't they know better? They're so stupid. You should listen to us, the geniuses that will tell you what a dumb idea this was. It's just wild. And so on the same day that you have don't blame Trump's Iran war on Israel, you have from the Foreign Policy magazine, "The Israel lobby bears a special responsibility for Donald Trump's Iran war." Yeah, no, for real, it does, obviously. To anybody paying attention, obviously. And then there's this post that I'm assuming is real, but it reminded me of a meme from about 10 years ago. This is from Aiden McLaughlin on X. "A good explanation here for why Trump thinks the war is going great and all the negative press coverage is wrong. He apparently is consuming and learning about the war through highlight reels. So each day since the start of the war in Iran, U.S. military officials compile a video update for Donald Trump that shows video of the biggest, most successful strikes in the Iran targets over the previous 48 hours, three current U.S. officials and former U.S. officials say. The daily montage typically runs for about 2 minutes, sometimes longer, the official said. One described each daily video as a series of clips blowing stuff up or stuff blowing up. The videos are also driving Trump's increased frustration with news coverage of the war. Trump has pointed to the success depicted in the daily videos to privately question why his administration can't better influence the public narrative, asking aides why the news media doesn't emphasize what he's seeing," one of the current U.S. officials and former U.S. officials said. Okay, so apparently every morning, Trump is being given a highlight reel, a two-minute-long compilation video of all of the things that the American military has destroyed in Iran. And that's all that it shows. And so every day, I guess Trump is being told, here's all the success that we're having. He's not told about the response, I guess. He's not told about the failures. He's only shown the highlights. And so he thinks everything's going great the entire time. This is like the most stereotypical, the most quintessential, like, downfall of a tyrant characteristic. I mean, you look at basically every tyrant in history. Hitler might be the best example, where it's just like at a certain point, they get mad when people tell them that their ideas are wrong or that they, you know, something's going badly. And they get mad at that person. And so everybody around them slowly, or rather quickly, learns, only give him good news, only tell him the successes. So suddenly he's operating off minimal, you know, real information, making decisions that are completely skewed because he's not being told the truth by people that are scared of getting on his bad side. And then they double down on it because, again, they're being kept from the bad information. So they get frustrated at anybody telling them the truth about it, because everybody around them, all the sycophants, are lying to them. Oh, it's going great. It's going great. So anybody that comes in and goes, you know, it's not actually going that great. It's like, this guy is a scumbag. He's trying to trick me. Get him out of here. And so they isolate themselves further. And eventually you get to the point where, again, they're consolidating all the decision-making power to themselves, operating off of insufficient information, and yet everybody's too scared to contradict or correct them. And so you end up invading Russia in the winter, and that's that, right? Or going to war with Iran, and there you go. So that's kind of troubling. And the really troubling thing, and it's funny, I thought everybody, it was like a pretty popular meme when it came out, and it kind of makes me think, like, is everybody new to this? Like, I don't know. I guess a lot of people woke up during COVID and stuff, but I had so many responses under this post that were like mad at me for trying to trick people. And it's like, guys, if you were paying attention to politics in 2018, you probably saw that it was like a very, very big meme. There are all these mainstream media articles about it. It's a fake excerpt from the Michael Wolff book. And it was like one of the funniest things ever. And this is another one of these things where it's like, even as a right winger and Trump supporter, this is still very funny. But now it's like, okay, this is kind of real. And again, the excerpt I'm about to read is not real. Everybody should obviously know because of how ridiculous it is. It's crazy that anybody can read this and be like, is this true? Is this real? It's like, no, obviously not. But it's like Trump has become the parody version of himself. In 2018, this was the parody post that went totally viral and tricked a bunch of people. It says, wow, this excerpt from Wolf's book is a shocking insight into Trump's mind. On his first night in the White House, President Trump complained that the TV in his bedroom was broken because it didn't have, quote, the Gorilla Channel. Trump seemed to be under the impression that a TV channel existed that screamed nothing but gorilla-based content 24 hours a day. To appease Trump, White House staff compiled a number of gorilla documentaries into a makeshift gorilla channel, broadcast into Trump's bedroom from a hastily constructed transmission tower on the South Lawn. However, Trump was unhappy with the channel they had created, moaning that it was boring because the, quote, gorillas aren't fighting. Staff edited out all the parts of the documentaries where the gorillas weren't hitting each other, and at last, the president was satisfied. On some days, he'll watch the Gorilla Channel for 17 hours straight, an insider told me. He kneels in front of the TV with his face about 4 inches from the screen and says encouraging things to the gorillas, like, the way you hit that other gorilla was good. I think he thinks the gorillas can hear him. Okay, I actually had people, there was somebody that reposted that and was like, this is fake news and everyone should block Harrison Smith. It's like, y'all, I'm sorry. I didn't think I had to clarify. I didn't think I had to tell you that it wasn't true that Trump watches the Gorilla Channel 17 hours a day. I assumed it was self-evident that this was a parody. Sorry. I guess that's the world we're in. I guess when you compare it to the real reporting about how he actually is being shown video compilations made especially for him to fit his preconceived notion about how the Iran war is going, even if it misconstrues the facts on the ground, I guess it's getting a little blurry. What's real and what's the parody? What's the ridiculous cartoonish, you know, characterization of stupid parody Trump versus the actual thing? So I don't know. It's very confusing. I mean, it's not confusing at all, but for some people, apparently it's very confusing. Fact check, Wolf's book about Trump does not mention Gorilla Channel. It's a joke from 2018. Yeah. So, again, it's like people are getting mad at me about this. It's not my fault. The man has become a parody of himself. But that's essentially what's happened here. And it's upsetting to me as it is to everybody, but it's just the facts. It's just the truth. And, of course, most people can see this. I'm going to go to clip 15 here. This is whistleblower Joe Kent giving a speech about the future of our country. And there's a couple things about this that I really feel like now is the time to strike, we have to create a third party. I think now is absolutely the right time to create a third party. Maybe a couple months ago would have been, but we hadn't gone to the war with Iran yet, because it'd be really nice to have this in place for the midterms. But, you know, we need to not be thinking all the time about the midterms, the next election, the shutdown, the immediate thing that's happening right now. What if we look like 2 years in advance? What if we looked, even call me crazy, like 5 or 10 years ahead? What if we put in long-term plans to actually create something viable and long-lasting that can successfully replace the Republican Party? What if we used all of the very popular MAGA politicians, influencers, media personalities that have all broken from MAGA in the very recent past and yet still retain a great deal of respect and influence with conservative Americans? What if Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massey and Joe Kent, like, what if all these people at this moment now, while their star is still in the sky and people are still paying attention to them, because, you know, unless Marjorie Taylor Greene gets a show on InfoWars or something, and then, you know, they're going to fade. They're going to fade away. They're throwing everything they got at Thomas Massey. Why don't you guys create a third party? How about you guys break away from the Republicans and bring all of their support with you? Why don't we do this? Now is absolutely the time to do this, more so than any other time in my life and maybe in the last century of American history. Third parties have never been viable. I think now's the time. I think there's enough outrage. I mean, it should just be the America First Party. America First. Is that not a good idea? Would people on the left not also abandon the Zionist-controlled Democrat wing and come over? Could we not also get the likes of Ro Khanna or others to join us? Could we not take the sort of coalition that Trump utilized to get elected in 2024, but then completely abandoned? Could we bring that over to our side? I mean, Robert Malone just left at the CDC. Basically, everybody good in the Trump administration, except for Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr., have either been fired or quit out of frustration. And Tulsi and RFK Jr. are like holding on by their fingernails and being blocked at every pass. So why don't all of these people that have all now served at the highest levels of our government now have the experience and at least some amount of knowledge of what it takes to work in those? Why don't you all separate? Why don't you all create a new party and we will all come with you and support you? I think now is the time. Let's go to this video from Joe Kent here.
I will not, in good conscience, send young men and women off to die on foreign battlefields. Our leaders will hear us if we all speak out. We're at a critical juncture in the war in Iran. We need to let our leaders hear that we do not support this war. We do not think there's a vital national security interest. We want to bring our troops home. We want to work towards peace in that region. We do not want 20-plus more years of bloodletting. And then as we head into this next election cycle, demand from everyone, from every political party, go to them, go to your representatives and say, I will not vote for you if you are going to vote for the continuation of these wars overseas.
And you better do it quick, because things are not going the Republicans' way. Evan Kilgore posted this on X. Good morning, MAGA. Both Trump-endorsed candidates in Florida's state special election lost last night to Democrats. Two state seats flipped Democrat. One race was in a Palm Beach district that Donald Trump won by 11 points in 2024. It's the place where Mar-a-Lago is located. MAGA, he says, is dead. I mean, I can't disagree. And this is just one of these like bellwether elections where it won by double digits. It's Trump's home district. He endorsed the Republican candidates, and they both lost substantially. That just adds to the very long list of elections that have entirely gone to Democrats. As Thomas Massey puts it, Republicans are losing support nationally because too many have abandoned their principles in D.C. Meanwhile, I'm being viciously attacked for sticking to principles of personal liberty, free market, fiscal responsibility, and transparency. Interactive Polls says Democrats have flipped a total of 12 state legislative seats in special elections in just 25 to 26. Texas, Iowa, Another one in Iowa, Arkansas, two in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Florida, Georgia, New Hampshire, Florida, and Mississippi have all flipped to Democrat. Texas being the most dramatic with a D plus 32 count on there. So Nancy Mace also eyeing a break with Trump and GOP over this Iran war. Nancy Mace told Axios she will most likely vote for House Democrats' resolution to constrain President Trump from waging war with Iran the next time he comes up for a vote. The vote is symbolic. Even if the measures passed both House chambers, Trump could veto it. But Mace's support puts the House one step closer to a major rebuke of the administration's Middle East operations. Okay, she can join the team. Okay, add Nancy Mace to Thomas Massie, Tucker Carlson, Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'd say, you know, some of the new great candidates are being pushed out by the Republican Party. They're being blocked by the Republican Party, like James Fishback or Casey Putsch. I mean, if these people had the backing of an institution, had a backing of a national party, they'd absolutely be winning. But because the Republican Party and the Trump administration put their effort behind Byron Donalds or whatever his name is and Vivek Ramaswamy, then we're being screwed. Then we're actually going to lose those races. It's not like, oh, we're going to get not the best Republicans. We're not going to get Republicans. The Democrats are going to win. Because they know, because they understand this, and they understand that all they have to do is oppose the war and speak in vagaries about helping families, and people go, well, at least they're not telling me to shut up about the Epstein files and sending my son to die overseas for Israel, so they got my vote. And they know this, and they are you know, seizing on this and making use of it. But they're having trouble too. The Democrats, I mean, the outrage about how controlled we are by Israel is, it's obviously cross-party and getting to a boiling point. Let's go to clip 21 here. This is Anthony Blinken, you know, Democrat, Secretary of State of Joe Biden. He was at Harvard University when he was asked a very pointed question that he really didn't have an answer to. Let's watch.
My question has to starts off with, in April 2024, USAID concluded that Israel was blocking aid to Palestinians in Gaza. But despite this, the next month in May, you told Congress, quote, we do not currently assess that the Israeli government is prohibiting or otherwise restricting aid, which allowed continued weapons supply to Israel, which was overriding your own experts.
All right.
You had opportunities.
Let's pause real quick. You said overriding your own experts. No, that's just lying. They just lied. So what he just said is that the official American government program, USAID, made an official determination that Israel was blocking aid. The Biden administration received that report and then turned around and said, no, they're not. That's not like overriding their intelligence with other intelligence. That's not like, well, there were some inconsistencies here. No, they were told the truth. The truth was inconvenient. The truth was at odds with what they wanted the truth to be. So they ignored the truth and lied. They just lied about what Israel was doing, lied about a humanitarian disaster and a crime against humanity that we were helping to facilitate. Back to the video.
Administration from arming Israel, which has committed what leading Holocaust scholars and human rights agencies call a genocide. You rejected them and continued arming Israel. This is your legacy. How do you justify to the countless Palestinians, including thousands of children, that died, you know, from your decisions?
Yes, of course. You couldn't be, and I wouldn't be human if I didn't ask myself every day, could we have done things differently? On the Israeli side, the trauma was such that I believe the determination across that society to take the actions that they took in Gaza was such that irrespective of what we did, they would have continued to do what they did. And cutting off arms, sure, that was an option. But I don't actually believe that, at least in the near term, it would have changed things. And I also believe it would have led to an even wider war. I do remain with a question in my mind about why barely a word was spoken in all those months about Hamas, which was an actor, too, and is responsible for so much of what happened. But, yes, we all look at it. I certainly look at it and say, maybe we could have done differently. Maybe we could have done better by the people. I wish we could have.
It's just ridiculous. We could have done better. So he's asked, you were told that Israel was blocking humanitarian aid. You changed that conclusion, lied about that in order to continue facilitating the starvation campaign that Israel is holding out. And Anthony Blinken's response is like, well, it doesn't really matter. It wouldn't have really mattered. as if America doesn't have the ability to influence Israel. They rely entirely on us. Cutting off the weapons would mean they could no longer wage the war that they were waging. It's a ridiculous thing for the Secretary of State of the United States to say there was nothing we could do. And to say that by lying about the facts on the ground, the humanitarian crisis and the crimes against humanity, that they would lie about that in order to continue sending them weapons and then say if we don't do that, the war could have spiraled even bigger. How could that possibly be true? If we had told the truth about Israel withholding food aid from starving people, the war would have gotten bigger. What? If we didn't keep supplying Israel with weaponry, the war would have gotten bigger. Okay, Syria was overthrown. Lebanon is being invaded. Iran is being invaded. How could the war possibly be bigger than it is now? It's just absurd. It's absurd. The answer is absurd. He didn't even address the question. His answer is, could we have done things differently? I wish we could have. No, you could have. You chose not to. You lied deliberately. And both parties do this. Both parties every single time. That was another thing with the boomer arguments is we were talking about Muammar Gaddafi and they were like, that was Obama and Hillary. And we're like, yeah, it's both parties. I know. It's not a left or right thing, actually. There must be some other aspect to it that is actually the thing driving us, I guess, huh? I guess it's not really a Republican thing or a Democrat thing. It's like kind of like whoever's in power, they all follow this same line. Isn't that something that we should pay attention to and note and determine our choices on that basis? But no, it's bad when they do it because they're Democrats. It's good when we do it because we're Republicans, even though it's the same thing. It's ridiculous. I can't believe these people are 70 years old. Today, folks, we have the Alex Jones signature Faraday bag bundle. And this is awesome because this is like everything you could need in a single bag. It's the America First Faraday badge, Faraday bag, which of course blocks all electronic signals. The America First tactical trench knife, which is like the coolest and absolutely biggest weapon we sell. An America First t-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense, Shilajit gummies plus Shilajit complex capsules, CMOS gummies plus CMOS capsules, plus the Warcry premium salts. It's a $600 value you're getting for less than $250 at thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. We want to let them know who sent you.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up. Go to the UN Zone website. They admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this. That's where it put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue. And I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this. And this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesstore.com is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best. And it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexjonesstore.com, and I thank you for your support.
The International Energy Agency has dropped another bombshell from its Paris headquarters, unleashing a fresh 10-point plan dubbed Sheltering from Oil Shocks. Released amid Brent crude spiking toward $120 a barrel and the Strait of Hormuz largely shut down, the document urges governments to slash global oil demand by an estimated 2.7 million barrels per day within 4 months. Key COVID 2.0-esque measures include mandating work from home up to 3 days a week, dropping highway speed limits by at least 6 to 10 miles per hour, imposing car-free Sundays in major cities, alternating vehicle access by license plate where odd-numbered plates get access on certain days and even-numbered plates get access on the other days, pushing carpooling and public transportation as we dwell in a reality where all of the machete-wielding lunatics are free to injure anyone they please under Blue City Soros DAs, cutting non-essential business flights by 40%, and promoting efficient trucking and rail alternatives. Yeah, you know, the trucking industry, rife with illegal aliens.
This illegal immigrant came into America in March of 2022. He was given a federal work permit by the Biden-Harris administration, and Gavin Newsom gave him a CDL license. On this day, he was driving intoxicated. When the traffic in front of him slowed down, he didn't slow down, and he plowed right through 8 cars, immediately killing 3 individuals and seriously injuring 4.
And the rail alternative, from the likes of the $16 billion California Governor Newsom burned to create nothing.
You want to be big? You got to be big in big things. This is the only high-speed rail system of its type anywhere in the United States of America. You could talk all you want. You guys are actually delivering, making things happen.
On the surface, it reads like pragmatic crisis management for a genuine supply crunch. But we just went through this engineered behavioral control bureaucratic nightmare, and in some respects we still are, and I guarantee the American people are not gonna line up like sheep this time. This isn't the first time the IEA has rolled out such a blueprint. Back in 2022, amid the Russia-Ukraine fallout, they issued an almost identical 10-point plan to cut oil use that pushed remote work, slower speeds, car-free days, and reduced air travel, measures that conveniently aligned with the post-COVID new normal of emerging restricted mobility and digital surveillance. Now, in 2026, the agency is recycling the playbook under the guise of sheltering consumers with language like immediate actions for advanced economies and heavy emphasis on limiting personal freedom of movement that will quickly morph into policy mandates, fines, internment camps, and enforcement grids. The IEA's own net zero by 2050 roadmap has long telegraphed the end game, slashing fossil fuel demand not through abundant cheap energy, but through rationing your lifestyle. The populace corralled like sheep, all while the elites jet between climate summits and award ceremonies. Expect the usual cascade towards establishment insolence, where corporate compliance, media cheerleading, and gradual normalization of surveillance apps to optimize your carbon or oil footprint ramp up. The Agenda 2030 goal is less than 4 years away, and the fools are going for broke. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
All right, folks, that is the latest from John Bound. Find and share it at InfoWars.com and band.video. COVID tyranny 2.0, the IEA 10-point plan. They're doing it, folks. Said it over and over. The human resistance to their program could only be overcome by one thing, World War III. Why do you think we attacked Iran? We'll be back on the other side with Leonardo Joni.
One of the most important things to me in my life is to get things right and to tell the truth and to be accurate. That's why they say Alex Jones is right. But it's not just our news, our prediction, our information that are incredibly accurate. It's the products. And out of all the amazing supplements at theyellowshowstore.com, our methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, is the best you're going to find on the market. It's so good for your body. Instant clean, amazing energy. You owe it to yourself, if you sat on the fence, to go to theyellowshowstore.com right now and get ultra methylene blue. And believe me, you are going to want to reorder it again. We have an 84% reorder on that product. No other supplement anywhere has anything even close. That is how amazing it is. Secure your ultra methylene blue now at theyellowshowstore.com. And thanks for keeping us on the air.
Repeat what you said is happening. You feel in the...
I feel like that stuff in my fingers. I feel tingling fingers.
There's the camera. Blast them with full power right there.
Ah!
Yeah!
No spin, no surrender. This is Harrison Smith on the War Room with live streams firing on X and band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined today by Leonardi Joni. She probably doesn't even need an introduction, but I'll give her one anyway. LeonardaIsFunny.com is her website. YouTube is LeonardaIsFunny, as is her Instagram. You can find her on X at LeonardaIsFunE, the letter E at the end. She, of course, is a stand-up comedian who recently got canceled, unfortunately, because I think we all sort of know the reason why. Tell us what happened, Leonardo, because this was different than just getting your account deleted, which you've already been subjected to from Indian hate gangs that will tag, you know, flag your stuff on X. This was beyond just being canceled online, right?
Oh, yeah. So stopantisemitism.org, that is started by, I'll get her name in a second. I can't say her name at all. But she looks like the Predator.
Yes.
Started an organization called stopantisemitism.org where she picks different people who are speaking out against Israel and makes them anti-Semite of the week or the year. Yep. And then calls up her network of fellow Zogbots to have there be repercussions against that person. She actually made a video. She was on a video recently at a conference saying very specifically how they were going to target anti-Semites. They were going to make their life hell. They used the words like kill them, but what they then said like, kill them off of food and all this stuff where they're not explicitly saying they're going to kill you, but they're basically saying that like they're going to cut off all your sources for making an income and just basically persecution. It's political persecution. And some people might be like, oh yeah, that's cool. That's fine. Like anti-Semites shouldn't exist. But this is where you got to ask yourself, what is the definition of anti-Semitism? Because it seems to be an ever evolving and expanding definition to include anyone who says anything that a group of elite Jews do not like.
Yep.
So this group of self-appointed elite Jews puts themselves in charge of the opinion of what all Jewish people think and puts themselves in charge of what things you as an American citizen can and cannot say. And those rules are changing every day. So you might be fine today. And tomorrow you find yourself saying, yeah, I don't think we should go to war with Turkey. And suddenly you are an anti-Semite and an enemy of the state.
Yep. And, so, and that's, well, that's sort of the most ridiculous part, right? It's not like these people are going around and they're finding out that the CEO of some major company is secretly, you know, a Nazi and he goes to KKK rallies and he's writing screeds about how all the Jews need to be killed. And they're like, oh my gosh, people need to be aware of how evil this man is. It's literally people just being like, oh, we're going to war for Israel again. And they literally say, we will hunt you down. We will hunt you down and destroy your life forever. They say never again will you be able to apply for a job. I'll show the clip because I have her in the Eighth Front.
Yeah.
She was actually a major inspiration for creating the Eighth Front because I was so aghast and appalled at how open she was about this activity. Like the threats they're making. This is almost a parallel justice system where you get no chance to defend yourself, no chance to appeal, no chance to even know you're being charged or what you're being charged with, but you're still being punished. And they have the authority to punish you. And if it's not stop anti-Semitism, you know, pressuring your company to fire you, or in your case, you know, it was people stop selling tickets or, you know, venues to stop hosting you, then they'll come in with, you know, the ADL and say, well, then wouldn't it be sad if all these other corporations boycotted your business just like they did with X? Well, you know, you're not going to get all these advertisements anymore unless you put in these controls. I mean, it's total universal coordinated blackmail on a very high level.
It's Bolshevik tactics of intimidation, persecution, and retribution. And this is all in the playbook of Bolshevikism. They are, and they're not going to stop here, by the way. They're not satisfied at just shutting you off from online. They will. People could call me crazy, but I know for a fact, I would wager every dollar that I have that if they could right now round up all the quote unquote anti-Semites and put them in a camp, just like they did in Russia, they would.
Well, I think you're being too kind. A camp costs money, Leonardo. A camp is expensive. You have to keep people there. You have to keep them fed. I don't think we're getting camps, Leonardo. I don't think we're going to be lucky enough to be put in camps.
Camps. They're going to do mass starvation campaigns. They're going to do shooting squads. They're going to do all that. My point is, the only thing keeping them back from that is that they do not have total control because Americans still own guns. But were they successful in getting guns completely removed the way they are trying to? If you look at every campaign to end guns has one of them behind it, they would 100% be doing this. Absolutely.
Well, and let's not forget, like in Australia, they already didn't have guns, but then there was the attack on Bondi Beach, which has a lot of elements of false flag. There's a lot of suspicious stuff there. But no matter what, they then did a further round of gun control and speech control. And like the story we have here, this is in Australia. A further two people have been charged as investigations continue into a planned public assembly in Sydney last month. So they didn't even have the assembly, but they planned to protest, and people are being arrested for this in Australia, for planning a protest against Israel. People have been arrested for hate speech. Okay, so that's where it goes from there. But when it comes to guns, they did another round of gun control, another round of gun confiscation, except they exempted Jewish groups. There are specifically Jewish groups, Jewish security groups, that not only are allowed to keep their guns, they're actually being given extra permits for even more guns and even, you know, special type of guns. In the UK, when the Jewish group had their ambulances burned, they got like $3.2 million to have armed guards there. UK, nobody can have weapons. They can. In Belgium, the Belgian army was put on the streets to defend Jewish groups when, again, Belgium, just like every other European country, has had a, you know, Muslim rape gang problem for a very long time. Never any considerations given to that. So when you talk about taking the guns, at the same time that that's happening, they're creating special carve-outs specifically for Jewish groups that they will actually continue to have guns and protection from the state.
Yeah, well, that's a phenomenal piece of information for people to really kind of face the reality that they're trying not to see because it's inconvenient. You know, Joel Davis is rotting away in solitary confinement, 4 months rotting away, solitary confinement. He's in the same prison as the Bondi Beach shooter, but the Bondi Beach shooter has access to food. He's got access to exercise. He can even read the Quran, which, by the way, he was supposed to be a radicalized Islamist. Why would you give him the Quran? Joel Davis does not get any of that because he made a tweet telling his followers, well, not a tweet, a post on Telegram, telling his followers to harass one of the politicians under a post she made in the comments. So he didn't even tell them go harass her in person. He said, go to this post that she made on social media and harass her in the comments. And they put him in jail for that because they were just looking for a pretext, which is what I'm telling you guys, where you today, you may be fully in compliance with the standards of anti-Semitism. And tomorrow you say something like, hey, go ratio this person in the comments, and they decide, nope, that's not okay. You're going into solitary confinement.
Solitary
confinement. So this is what we're dealing with. Solitary confinement. Yeah, he's been rotting away for 4 months in solitary confinement. It's really awful.
Yeah, well, I want people to truly understand what you're saying. He made a tweet, didn't call for violence.
He made a Telegram post.
He made a Telegram post saying, go comment on this person's, go argue with this person online. No, he made a Telegram post.
He said, basically he said metaphorically, this is what I think the exact words were. Go metaphorically rape her in the comments, meaning we know what that means, right? It means fucking rip them a new one. We say this, right? Go rip this person a new asshole in the comments. Now, do we think when we say that to each other, oh, wait, actually, we want you to go, you know, sodomize someone? No.
Obviously, right?
We know what that means, but it doesn't matter because they just wanted a pretext and they've thrown him. He's in the same, you can look this up.
Yeah.
Harrison, he's in the same prison as the Bondi Beach shooter, which was deemed like it was not up to humanitarian code. It had problems. It was supposed to be shut down. But the Bondi Beach shooter is being treated better than Joel Davis.
And so Joel Davis has been kept in solitary confinement and is given nothing to read. Okay.
That's literal torture. People are able to send him stuff. I did post it before. You can send him an A10 envelope, with, you know, chapters of his favorite books. I think he liked Nietzsche and, you know, something else. I forgot what it was he liked. And then you can also send him any, screenshots of tweets about him or about what's going on. He likes to see that, but you can send it in an A10 yellow envelope and I'm being told he will get that. He can't get actual books. He can get pages of a book.
This is the post from Europa. Australian nationalist activist Joel Davis has had his third bail application denied, meaning he faces another month in jail. He's been in prison since November for a Telegram post in which he referred to the, quote, rhetorical rape of politician Allegra Spender. So there you go. That's the clarification. So he can get letters. I didn't know that.
That was in January. They made that post in January that he had been in there since November. We're in March now, right? So I think it's been 4 months, maybe five of him.
For
a Telegram post.
Meanwhile, other people are being arrested for merely planning a protest against this.
Yep.
And of course, in the Eighth Front War, I mean, maybe we need to play a documentary like daily, but you have the Australian Jewish, it's whatever their ADL is. It's the Australian version of that. And he's literally going, what do we want? No more protest. No more protest. And it's just like, I'm sorry. These are the people that we're handing our civilization over to. Why?
But do we remember the protests that we were allowed to have for George Floyd and for all these criminals?
Of course.
That was fine. They were behind that. So this was the funny thing about here's the post. Well, you guys really just gotta get how absolutely insane they are. So Stop Anti-Semites, the Twitter account said, Leonardo Joni is a comedian. They use it in quotes. First of all, I am a comedian, bitch. Okay. Who frequently promotes conspiratorial narratives suggesting Jews wield hidden power over governments, media, and global events, framing Jews as a secretive elite manipulating world affairs. And in order to prove that this was not true, she gathered her network of Jews that we don't know who they are and got me deplatformed from what is essentially not even that important of a website where you just use, like if you're a touring comedian or a performer, you use it to list your show dates so that people can find you.
Right.
So in order to prove that I am saying something wrong about Jews wielding hidden power over governments, media, and global events, she gets me removed from a platform.
It's ironic, of course, but it's just what happens, right? If you talk about it, then you're the bad guy, but they get to do it out in the open. And what they're doing is preventing you from making the max amount of money, from getting the most attention. Yep. I mean, it's a service that a lot of people use to sell tickets to their events, to gain popularity, to gain an audience. They are trying to cut you, or they have cut you off from that
Here's the funny thing, right? Because, and I am going to be pursuing legal action because, first of all, they are defaming me. I have never come out as an anti-Semite or hating Jews or hating a whole group of people. I have spoken out against elite Jewish supremacy, which you're clearly proving me I'm correct, right? I have spoken out against Zionist control of our government, which moves us in the direction of international wars, which I do not think the American people should die for. And that does not make me a hater of all of your people. That would be like saying someone who speaks out against the high rate of crime in the black community hates all black people.
Yep.
Which, first of all, is contradicted, because if you actually hated black people, you would want to promote the levels of violence within their community,
right?
Because the main victims of their violence are them.
Yep.
And so they would essentially be taking care of the problem for you. So if I'm speaking out against elite Jewish supremacy, which I actually think endangers regular Jewish people, that actually makes me an ally, not an enemy. Because I don't like to see racism and bigotry being propagated because of the actions of a few people who don't care about sacrificing these people. And we know that. We know they have it, and they have an ideology that says, well, if a few Jews have to die for the greater good of the Jewish people, as is defined and determined by the elites who want war, then so be it.
Yep. No, you're exactly right. But of course it's worse than that, right? Because even if you came out and said, I hate all Jews and I am an anti-Semite, guess what? We have the First Amendment. And hey, people might see that and not like that and not want to do business with you. That's their prerogative. But that's not what's happening here. This is a coordinated, organized effort to punish you for a crime that isn't actually a crime, but they think it is. And they have the ability to punish you, and you have no ability to fight back. That's why I characterize it almost as like a parallel justice system, because – and this has happened recently. We covered it when it was first being discovered that people were signing up for a premium on X and were finding their names were being searched in Israel immediately after that. And then – and I actually talked to people who run very big anonymous accounts who, as soon as they signed up for Twitter premium, their bank accounts got deleted. So what's happening is that there's an Israeli company that does the identifications for Twitter premium and to make money with Twitter. So if an anonymous account is anti-Israel, the Israeli government can go to the Israeli, you know, organization that does the back end of Twitter, get your information, your name and your address, send that name and address to an organization like Stop Anti-Semitism, and then they can use your actual identification to find out who you work for, where you live, and then start calling your landlord, trying to get you evicted, calling your business, trying to get you shut down. I mean, this is it's tied in with the Israeli government directly. This is an attack by a foreign nation on Americans and specifically on our First Amendment. The government has a duty to protect American people from this type of retribution because of what we say. I really think we have to have some sort of punishment, some sort of legal framework where these people can't do this anymore.
I fully agree with you. I think it should be illegal for organizations to go after private citizens in this way, especially when you know they're doing it on behalf of a foreign government. Like, if this was Iran, or if this was Saudi Arabia, or if this was Afghanistan, or if this was Russia, if this was any other country, the people would be up in arms and the government would be taking action against them.
Of course.
But somehow, because it's our ally, supposedly, right? Our ally, which is undermining our own sacrosanct rights and liberties, we have to tolerate it. And people somehow feel like they're doing something wrong for opposing this, which is insane.
It's crazy.
And I'm telling people that it is not going to end here. People like you, people like me, people who are getting attacked, we are the canary in the coal mine.
Yeah.
We are chirping right now. We are telling you, hey, we're at a very dangerous time. What comes next is not a little oh, they made a post about you on a blog and they got you removed from a website. It is literally total disenfranchisement. You will be persecuted as an enemy of the state, which means your right to own guns will be taken away from you, all of your basic liberties, and that's the nice option. The bad option is we get a Holodomor 2.0. We get a Bolshevik Revolution 2.0. We get mass death and murder of innocent people because they are opposed to being ruled by a foreign entity that they did not elect or even aren't even allowed to know or speak out against.
And who clearly do not have our same morals or fundamental principles. I mean,
let me just jump in there, right? Because this is one of the things I always get into it with boomers, conservative boomers, and I love you guys. Like, for the love of God, just please open your ears a little bit. But they'll say things like, oh, we don't want the Muslims and we don't want the Mexicans and we don't want these people because they don't share our values. And I'm like, fine, that's fair. I agree with you. You should not have people who don't share your values having political power in your country. These people, these pro-Israel people, the Laura Loomers of the world, they don't share your values either because they don't believe in your right to criticize them, which is the First Amendment exists for your right to criticize everyone, yep, including the king, or in our situation, the president. Suddenly, that is not allowed for this one group, because they've made up a narrative where if you criticize them, you're endangering their life, which makes you wonder, hey, if me criticizing you and speaking out against what you're doing somehow puts your life in danger, why is that? Because if somebody criticizes me, right, if somebody says, oh, Leonarda is a shitty comedian and she's not funny and she sucks and she's fat and all that stuff, it's like, cool. People can go investigate that and be like, she's funny or she's not funny or whatever, but my life's not going to be in danger. But somehow, if we say, hey, wait a second, there's an elite Jewish force that's controlling our government and not letting us speak out, that endangers your life. Well, why would people be, if that was true, why would it make people so angry that it would endanger you? Are you doing something with that power that is contrary to the interests of the everyday human being, so much so that would actually bring them to a level of violence?
They're only mad because it's true.
Well, they're mad because it's so here's the other thing, right? It's like you're dealing with a super paranoid group of people. You know, have you ever dealt with a very paranoid person who's always like, oh my God, don't ask this. And then they attack you if you ask any questions. It's usually because they're doing something they don't want you to know about.
Right.
And so what we have is a group of people who must be doing something they don't want us to know about. And every time we even get close, they lash out like a paranoid, narcissistic, pathological person, because you're close to finding something out, and that is what puts them in danger.
Well, and of course, it's just bizarre because they literally brag about this. So they brag about it, but if you say exactly the same thing, they'll get you fired and destroy your life. I'm going to show that clip on the other side, a little segment from the Eighth Front War with Leonarda Joni on the other side. She's going to stay with me for the remainder of the hour. Follow her on X at Leonarda is Fun E.
Ladies and gentlemen, this broadcast is funded by you. I'm not funded by the Israelis, the Russians, the Iranians, the Qataris, the Democrats, the Republicans, any NGOs, any of that. I'm funded by the few sponsors we have that are amazing, like Kirk Elliott Precious Metals, and our supplements, t-shirts, great knives, you name it. Everything we sell is something I think's cool, that I think's great, that works really well. And I'm here to tell you folks that supplements are one of the fastest growing industries the last 30 years. Go to Whole Foods, go anywhere, it's like it just gets bigger and bigger because they work. There's a lot of great stuff at Whole Foods or GNC. But what we sell is the creme de la creme at prices way lower than you can get the exact same thing at Whole Foods, because most of what we have is just private label of already a top brand. I don't reinvent the wheel. When something's got top ratings, totally tested, 5 stars, we can private label it. Baby, we just slap our name on it and sell it to you at a discount. But some of the stuff, like T3, is the only true atomic iodine. And I didn't mean it's radioactive. It's on the atomic table. It's the good halogen, the opposite of fluoride. You have to have a DEA license to manufacture this. Nobody does it but us. It takes up to 8 weeks to make it. It's made in Arizona. This is the same as X2, but even stronger. It's a patented process. T3 iodine is now available at thealishonestore.com. And we have a flash sale that's only going until tomorrow night at midnight Central Time, 1 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Mountain, 10 p.m. Pacific. And that is the two awesome vehicles. One of the offers is ending. The new one started this week. So you can get put in to the raffle 500 entries. Excuse me. You can put in 100 entries. There are only just 5 entries for everything you buy in the store each time for the raffle to be able to get the Ford Mustang Shelby GT500 and the 2025 Ford Raptor plus $20,000 in cash. Normally, each thing you buy, each time you're in the store, you get 5X entry into the lottery. This to the raffle, this is 100X. Until midnight Central tomorrow. So take advantage of that. But even cooler is the backpack Faraday bag. They only got a limited number of these 5-6 months ago. They sold out in 1 day. They got a lot more this time, but it's still a limited run. I bet this is sold out in less than a week. It is a beautiful backpack with all these inner pockets and zippers. And it's just amazing. I bought a similar bag for over $500 years ago. This is amazing. It protects your phones, your laptops, your iPads from being tracked. When you don't have them in these, everywhere you go, you're being tracked by private corporations, criminals, government, you name it. Plus, if there's an EMP blast, you name it, it protects what you've got. So you want to keep stuff in your house that you'll save from that. It's also great to do that. And it comes with a whole bunch of free gifts inside of it, because these bags are usually, you know, over $500. It's a $600 value. You get it for $249 if you're a VIP member, $199. And you get an America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife, America First Limited Edition T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Brain Boosters and Immune Boosting Shilajit Gummies and Capsules, CMOS Gummies and Capsules. That's 2 bottles. Each Warcry Premium Smelling Salts and so much more in the bag. Get it now at theolishowstore.com and keep us on the air. Plus, these are great products.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Leonarda Joni is with me. She recently came under attack by an organization called Stop Antisemitism. And I'm going to show a little clip from the Eighth Front War, and you're going to see the woman who runs Stop Antisemitism. You'll recognize her in the fact that she does kind of look like the Predator, or she kind of looks like a retarded child's drawing of Lord Farquaad from Shrek. I think you'll understand what I mean. She's the ugly one, okay? The more ugly one, because there's another woman, and I sort of intercut them, and I think it's pretty obvious why. But here's a selection from the Eighth Front War featuring the Stop Antisemitism woman bragging about what they do to people that criticize them. Let's watch.
You've got all these conspiracy theorists online going on and on about how, you know, if you try and say anything, if you try and do anything against Jews, they're going to come after you.
We have featured more than 1,000 anti-Semites.
And they're going to destroy you and take away your business, and therefore you have to be really, really scared.
These Jew haters have faced real consequences, including firings, suspensions, and expulsions.
And it's kind of starting to come true.
We will shine a light on you that will follow you for the rest of your life. When you look for a job, when you look for a spouse, when you look for a nanny, when you look for anything.
And I love that.
So again, it's sort of the two sides, sort of the two faces, right? It's the, like, people say that, like, Jews would, like, destroy you when you talk about them. And, like, it's kind of true. I don't know. Mixed with just, like, we will destroy your life.
Mm-hmm.
We will absolutely.
Well, that was her. Crazy. Her name is, the one that was speaking at the podium, her name is, Leora Reznichenko. That's her full last name, even though she tries to go by Rez, but let's get her full last name out there. Her father was Yuri Reznichenko. He was a Ukrainian politician who had been accused, by the way, of pedophilia.
What?
He was the head of Zaporizhia Regional State Administration until 2019. In 2020, an investigation by the Ukrainian Prosecutor General's office found evidence that Reznichenko had sexually abused minors and produced child pornography. Now, this is all alleged. We think this might be her father. This is something we're working on behind the scenes. The investigation was launched after a tip from an anti-pedophile group called Stop Pedophilia, which claimed to have obtained compromising materials involving Reznichenko. This is a man who we think is her father, and underage boys. Now, he denied all allegations, but he still resigned from his position, which was in the Ukrainian's parliament, pending the outcome of the case against him. So it had the case highlighted widespread corruption and impunity for high-ranking officials involved in sexual crimes against children in Ukraine. In 2022, leaked documents suggested that Reznichenko may have used his political influence to cover up his crime for years, including pressuring witnesses not to testify against him. So I'm doing some investigation on this to find out how true and likely this is, because since this person wants to shine a light on anyone who has anything critical to say about the war in Iran and not being in favor of supporting Israel with everything, I think it would be helpful to know whether she comes from a family of people who use their political power in this sort of despicable way. Why don't we shine a light on them? Let's see who is behind the curtain demanding that we bend the knee to them.
Yeah, I mean, again, self-appointed Jewish overlords, the ADL, Stop Antisemitism, the Canary Mission. I mean, these are like extremely well-funded. Billionaires pour millions of dollars into these organizations. I mean, you hear Jonathan Greenblatt brag at the ADL over and over. We have 40 engineers working full-time doing this stuff. I mean, all they're doing is looking for people criticizing them and then trying to destroy their lives. Why do we allow these organizations to do this?
Let's just tie everything together. The ADL, we know, was started Leo Frank was found guilty of raping and murdering a 13-year-old girl, Mary, do you remember her name, Mary?
Fagan.
Yes, Mary Fagan, right? And he tried to pin it on the black janitor. And the KKK, the supposed super racists of the South, band together with the black men to hunt down Leo Frank and hang him, because that's how overwhelming the evidence was that Leo Frank had done the crime.
Well,
he was found guilty.
Yes, I want to clarify. He was found guilty. He was given the death penalty officially. The only reason he wasn't supposed to be hanged by the state was because his friends went to the governor and got him a pardon. And so the people in the community went, no, we don't care if the governor, if, you know, his rich friends paid the governor to pardon him. He killed
that's
our
correct.
Daughter. We're killing him. Like, that's just how it works.
That's correct.
So it was never
even
a question. He was never innocent. It was never a question that he was innocent. It was always a question of Jewish influence getting him free, and then they're mad that it didn't work, I guess. I mean, it's crazy that this is the organization that trains our FBI and has since the 1940s. It's nuts.
The ADL rewrote history and said he was unjustly hanged and because he was pardoned and all this stuff. But when you go, of course, when you go investigate it, you find out he was guilty of sin, because if these white people in the South during this time, who are supposedly so racist, did not jump at the chance to lynch a black man, if they actually took the time and said, wait a second, you know, we don't want to just kill this black man. I think that really speaks to how much evidence there was that Leo Frank had done it.
Yeah.
And,
oh, and there are Jewish people again, on the jury, by the way.
Yeah. But again, right, the reason the ADL is so incensed, the reason these people are so incensed is because you guys are goys. We're goys. We are subhuman. We are below them. The equivalent of this, Harrison, would be if you have a steak dinner and then all the cows on your ranch go, he ate one of us. And they got together and they decided that they were going to persecute you for the crimes you committed against the cow. You would say, you're a bunch of cows. You don't have a jurisdiction over me, right? That you need to get inside their mindset to understand why they get so incensed when all we do is demand the same levels of justice for them as we do for anybody else. It is because the cows are asking for justice.
That's
the cows
so funny.
Aren't supposed to have justice.
That's a very funny way of putting it. And like, it beggars an explanation. Why would people go to bat for a rapist and a murderer? Like, that's not a normal thing to do. There's got to be an explanation to it. And that
it's one of ours. It's one of ours. And you don't get to deal with one of ours. We do. This is why so many of them just go. They do whatever they want everywhere else around the world. They rape children around the world. And then when the courts over there start to, you know, come down on that person, they flee. Like, we just had that Tom Alexandrovich who, if I'm correct on his name, forgive me because I know a lot of this stuff, but I don't always get all the details exactly right.
No, you're right. Tom Alexandrovich, he was the head of Israel the Cyber Dome program. He was a cybersecurity expert. Yeah.
And he was here for one of those conferences. And while he was here, he was caught trying to have sex with a child, or he did have sex with a child. And they found him. They tracked him and they arrested him and he was extradited to Israel. He's never been back. He didn't even show up for his court date.
And it was an Israeli dual citizen judge that let him go.
Yeah, because the cows don't get to say whether we get to rape or eat you. That's not up to you. That's up to us.
Well, it's a sick mindset, and it's sickeningly prevalent these days. Again, I mean, what gives this woman the right to think that she can destroy your life? And she's gleeful about it, right? She's like reveling in it. We will destroy your life wherever
right.
you go,
well, you
no matter
understand.
What you try to do. Sick.
You need to understand that they are the only human beings and we are the cows. I mean, one of the things that she highlighted me for as quote unquote proof of me being an anti-Semite was that I said it's one big club and the goyim aren't in it.
You were quoting Epstein?
I was actually quoting Epstein.
That's what
that
it sounds
matter.
Like. You sound like something
matter.
Epstein would say. Have you seen that there's a movie or a play now about Roald Dahl? Have you seen this?
Yes.
Well, what do you think about it? I've got the actual thing that he wrote, and it's really kind of a fascinating, like segment from his story. I'll find it here in just a second, but, essentially there's a play, and it's like, it's a play about how Roald Dahl was a despicable anti-Semite. Roald Dahl, beloved children's author, who did Danny Champion of the World and James and the Giant Peach and Willy Wonka. And it's like, okay, well, gee, I wonder if Hollywood's still making money off of all of those movies, or if they were too outraged by his outrageous anti-Semitism. But it's like, okay, the man has been dead for like decades and they've now resurrected him and they've got John Lithgow playing him just to smear him as an anti-Semite. It's like, well, who the hell does it? Who would put that play on? Who would go watch that play? That is the motivation for the play is to...
Harrison.
It's crazy.
Rome has been over as a civilization for 1,700 years approximately. And their vendetta against Rome is as fresh as if it happened yesterday. This is a people that remembers every supposed sin committed against them and vows vengeance to their last breath. This is not normal.
It really is bizarre. Here's the story from New York Times. John Lithgow is superb as Roald Dahl in Broadway show about his revolting anti-Semitism. So again, who like reads this and is like, oh, revolting anti-Semitism. Let's go watch.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go watch what it's like to observe. Now, the reason they call him a quote unquote revolting anti-Semite is because he wrote in his autobiography about being in Palestine before Israel existed and talking to a Jewish person, and he just wrote about the conversation that they had. There's nothing anti-Semitic about it. I think at one point he's like sort of shocked at how the Jews were refugees and then immediately would turn around and start abusing refugees on their land. He was like, oh, that was kind of, that's weird. Like, you people are suffering under this type of attack. Why would you then go to attack somebody else that way? And that's enough. And so now, you know, he wrote his personal experience in Palestine in the 1930s. And now, you know, 50 years after his death, he has to be smeared forever as an anti-Semite. That must become his identity. And they'll still make money off the new remake of Willy Wonka, but his name won't be on it. Right. They'll take his work and make money off it. But, you know, he's the devil.
Yep. Well, like I said, they have to do it for anyone who's so much as breathed in the wrong direction when it came down to them and their prominence. And they remember every last slight, even a perceived slight, which is, you know, what happened with me. It's like, oh, I'm making jokes online post Epstein. Oh, Epstein's calling us the Goyim. He's talking about this is how the Jew makes money. And I'm making fun of them, and that is enough. It's a person. So you're dealing with a narcissistic, paranoid group of people. And the reason they are that way is because they're up to something, and they do not want you to discover them, because what they're up to is not good for you. And they know that the only way they can succeed is if it remains secret. And so when anyone gets close to start sniffing in the direction of what they're doing and might actually speak out, it is a danger to them, because it means you might blow the cover on these secret plans, which cannot happen if the people find out.
Well, and it's just, I mean, to me, it's like, you know, these types of headlines, it's like we have to denormalize this. Like, it's just, it's like we all, I don't know, are just like hypnotized, and like these headlines come out and I just want to shake people and go, do you realize how crazy this is? How unhealthy this is? How you're making a play to criticize some dude that wrote children's books? It's not like a healthy way to be. That's like a deep psychological illness that you're suffering en masse, and you're writing articles about it as if it's something to be celebrated. That's so bizarre. And I just want to read a little bit of this, because, again, I actually think it's a really fascinating, like, insight from somebody that was there on the ground. He says, in June 1941, I happened to be in, of all places, Palestine, flying with the RAF against the Vichy France and the Nazis. Hitler happened to be in Germany, and the gas chambers were being built, and the mass slaughter of the Jews was beginning. Our hearts bled for the Jewish men, women, and children, and we hated the Germans. Exactly 41 years later, in June 1982, the Israeli forces were streaming northward out of what used to be Palestine into Lebanon, and the mass slaughter of the inhabitants began. Our hearts bled for the Lebanese and Palestinian men, women, and children, and we all started hating the Israelis. Never before in the history of man has a race of people switched so rapidly from being much pitied victims to barbarous murderers. Never before has a race of people generated so much sympathy around the world and then, in the space of a lifetime, succeeded in turning that sympathy into hatred and revulsion. It is as though a group of much-loved nuns in charge of an orphanage had suddenly turned around and started murdering all of the children. And again, it's like what he's saying is we hated the Germans and we're fighting a war against the Germans because they were treating Jews this way. Is it not ironic? Is it not something to note?
Allegedly,
right.
Because they were allegedly.
But it's either way.
You know, here's what I say. If your assumptions and your premises bring you to a contradictory conclusion, one of your premises or your assumptions is false. So we get to this contradictory conclusion where this group of people were the innocent victims of mass persecution and genocide, and they turn around and become the perpetrators of genocide in a way that seems completely contrary to their nature. So one of our assumptions or our premises is false. Is it likely, is that normal behavior for groups of people to change from one way of operating 180 degrees and become their total opposite in basically one generation? No, it is not. And so we must come to the conclusion that perhaps we do not know the full truth of what was going on in World War II, and that maybe our sympathies were aroused in order for them to be able to do exactly what they are doing now, which is a mass persecution of people when they have power, which, by the way, seems to be their behavior every single time they get power, as can be proven by the Bolshevik Revolution, which, no matter what they want to tell you, was the top brass was 85% of the tribe, with the Holodomor, starvation of the innocent Ukrainians, with what happened in Hungary when the communists tried to take over. Many would even say that the persecution of the Armenians by the hands of the Young Turks has ties back to this group of people. So every single time, there seems to be a consistency when we look at that. The only inconsistent time is supposedly the time in Germany when they were mass executed and were total victims of an unwarranted persecution.
Well, either way, it's just – I just feel for Roald Dahl. I just feel for, you know, you go, it's like, you go, hey, the Germans are killing innocent civilians. And the reaction's like, oh my God, well, we got to fight those guys. We got to stop them. That's horrible. And
then that's okay.
But then 20 years later, you go, you say exactly the same thing. Hey, the Israelis are killing civilians. And it's like, what the hell is wrong with you? You bastard, you anti-Semite. It's crazy.
Harrison, the cows are angry at the farmer for eating them. Don't you get it?
It makes sense. I don't know what to tell you. It makes sense.
If the cows have sympathy for one of the farmer's children getting eaten by the animals, the farmer says, these are good cows. They care about my child. They're good cows. Now, if the cows get upset because the farmer starts eating the sheep, the farmer goes, you're cows. You're not supposed to feel that way. Get out of here. Don't you get it? That's what it is. You got to understand that. So, because it's not going to make sense as long as you keep thinking that they're playing by the same rules as us.
Well, and just to like confront the criticisms I know, you know, we'll face for talking like this. It's like, this is extremism. That's what this is. It is a Jewish extremism.
Yes.
So it's not like all in the same way that Muslim extremism you can be against while not hating all Muslims, you can be against this expression of Jewish extremism, and you have to be and you should be. And really, the people who should be most concerned about this are the regular Jewish people that don't agree with this crap. Like, if you're not somebody that is sitting there going, Roald Dahl must pay, Roald Dahl for he wrote the BFG and now we must smear him. Like, if you think that's crazy too, then you need to be speaking out about this. It can't just be us speaking out about this, because everybody should, because this is insanity, it's extremism, it's tyranny, it's ridiculous, it's un-American, and it's pathological, and everybody should be able to see that. So I just want to ward off some of the claims where it's like, but you're saying that all Jews are in the secret cabal, and it's like, if you're not, then you should be speaking out against it.
We've never said that. I've never said that. I've never claimed that. I don't believe that. I think that's ridiculous. That's a level of insanity that I will not ascribe to.
Well, and it's but
they make it seem like they're acting on behalf of all Jewish people.
Right. Well, exactly.
It seem like they were put in charge and they were elected. And I'm saying that's bullshit.
Exactly. 100%. They literally have no authority. They have no legitimacy. They cannot be doing this. Like, they legally should be prevented from doing this. But like, when you had your Twitter account deleted because you were targeted by a bunch of Indians, we came out and we said, look what these Indians are doing. Look at this Indian group of Indian people on the basis of their nationalism doing this. It's like, we are talking about this because it's happening, not because they're Jewish. But then we get called anti-Semites because they're Jewish, right? We would be talking about this no matter who it is. So just again, to ward off the claims that it's like, you're saying that, blah, it's like, look, it's not our fault they're Jewish. Okay. We're going to talk about it because it's happening. They're Jewish. That's not our fault that that's the case. So, and it's not our fault that that's the basis upon which they're doing this.
If we were having a conversation about drive-by shootings, we'd be talking about black people. That doesn't make us racist. Those are the facts, right? If I was having a conversation about corny dancers, we'd be talking about white people. That doesn't make us racist.
Madam.
I can look at you, Harrison, and I know you're a corny dancer, so don't even come at me.
You'd be surprised, I think. No.
Yeah, but my point is that you don't want us to talk. Stop doing it. Stop Stop doing
exactly.
it.
That's exactly it. And that's what I mean, is it's like I keep getting called an anti-Semite because Jews are doing bad things. Not my fault.
You don't want me to say there's a secret cabal of Jews who control media and what you can say about them? Then don't cancel me when I say it.
Don't make videos bragging about it. There's a good start.
I mean, seriously, like you're saying it. Literally, all the things I said were already said by a Jew about themselves. So what exactly did I say that was wrong or was too much or was false? None of it.
Yeah, it's a celebration parallax. You say the same thing, but you're negative. You're the bad guy. This is something also that the left is fully aware of. The left is being censored at a massive degree. People who are protesting Palestine on college campuses are being attacked. Like, this is really, we need to do something about this. And I think we have a massive majority of the American people on the left and the right who are sick and tired of these unelected scumbag self-appointed overlords
Absolutely.
Telling us what to do.
Absolutely.
So I really think we need like a third party or something just to deal with this stuff. And what do you think? What do you think the solution to this is?
I don't want to get
you know, don't answer that. Yeah, now that I did. Sorry. How should I phrase that?
Well, I will say, here's the truth, right? The left and the right don't exist. They exist for the goyim. They exist for the delusion of the people to make them enemies of each other. But once you pass the low ranks of our country and you go into the ranks that actually have power, there is one party. And we know this because the Democrats and the Republicans, they behave very eerily similar when it comes to the things that those parties want. Like, for example, the Iran war.
Yep.
CNN was running coverage showing that 100% of MAGA approves of the war, thereby saying, look, it's a popular war.
Yep.
CNN, the group that hates Trump. Van Jones, who hates Trump, was arguing in favor of the Iran war.
No, you're exactly right. So, it was the only time during the State of the Union that both sides of the aisle stood up and clapped was when he talked about going to war with Iran.
Here's what I'll just say real quick. To the people who are sitting there hating each other because you guys are on other sides of the political aisle, take a look at the people there who are actually your enemies. They don't. They shake hands with each other. They're buddy-buddy. So the time is to realize there's really only going to be two powers. There's going to be the power that wants American independence and sovereignty, and that's the most important and really the single issue. And there's going to be the power that wants Israel-dominated foreign policy and no rights for our people.
Seems to be the dichotomy. Folks, go to LeonardaIsFunny.com. LeonardaIsFunny.com. You got to go there because you got kicked off the other platforms.
Here at the InfoWars studio in Austin, Texas, there's not a single desk, workstation, or studio where you can't find a half-empty product from thealexjonesstore.com. That's because we all put our money where our mouth is. And you too can be confident that you're putting into your body the absolute best supplements, nootropics, drink mixes, and tinctures that money can buy. So to all of you who are on the fence about ordering from thealexjonesstore.com, what are you waiting for? And to all of you who've made the commitment, we here at InfoWars salute you, and we'd like to say,
thank you for your support.
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 Thank you for your support at thealexjonesstore.com.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Welcome back, folks. Third hour of the War Room is on. We're going to move on to some other topics here, including this. Meta and YouTube sickos deliberately harmed children. Here is how it happened behind the scenes from somebody who was there.
I'm having kind of an emotional reaction to the Meta verdict out of LA today, and I want to sort of tell you an origin story about my experience covering this stuff for as long as I have and why it's so... Like literally I'm talking to anchor after anchor today. I've done MS Now, BBC, PBS, CNN, and I get goosebumps when I talk to people because what I'm getting, so let me tell you the origin story first. So I was at a dinner in 2016, when I was first writing my book, The Loop, How Technology is Creating a World Without Choices and How to Fight Back. And at that dinner, were a bunch of graduate students, newly minted kind of behavioral science people who were now starting apps. And these were for the most part people trying to do pretty nice things with these apps. They were like trying to get you to save money or work out or whatever. And they were using, you know, behavioral studies to try and make their apps addictive and compelling, right? So that you would do good in the world, you know, that you would benefit from it was the idea. And there were these two guys who showed up and gave this presentation, and they were addiction experts, literally selling their expertise in addiction to these guys. And they were asked at one point, well, would you do this for anybody, or do you only do it for sort of nice folks like us, you know, nice folks? And they were like, well, we don't want to be the thought police, so we'd kind of do it for anybody, is what they said. They went on to, they were calling themselves Dopamine. And they went on to, they got profiled on 60 Minutes in various places. But I remember sitting there and watching them and listening to them. And then we got into this argument, and I was arguing specifically with a guy who was hosting the night, a guy named Nir Eyal, who is now kind of styled as a reformer, but wrote this book called Hooked that was literally about making people addicted. And he had all of this creepy stuff to say in which he clearly was dividing in his mind between the people in that room and kind of everyday people. And the way addiction works on people of a certain background and education and resource level and how it works on other people. And it was this very spooky experience that I remember just coming out of that and after talking with those folks just being like, this is bad. Like we are in a bad situation. And ever since then, in writing the book and in speaking to, you know, I mean, I've worked many places, right, where I've tried to articulate this idea that our behavior is not our own, that any of us is susceptible to behavior, not just monitoring, but adjustment, like nudging and, you know, behavioral, guidance at scale through design. And I couldn't get that across to people for the most part. I have people that I love and respect who just don't believe that. They believe that we're in charge of all of our own decisions and da 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 da. And that has been such a source of frustration to me as I watched, you know, a whole generation of kids fall into these addictive patterns and, you know, little kids falling into addictive patterns at the hands of these companies. And now a jury of 12 random people looked at the evidence, saw the internal documentation from these companies and how they talk about kids and addiction and, you know, creating compelling product. And they said, no, this is bad. And this is harm. This is addiction. This is a defective product being sold knowingly. And that is the historic nature of this, not just this particular verdict, but the idea that it has made its way into the popular consciousness that your behavior really can be controlled in some sense, at least shaped in some sense by these for-profit companies. And so, and those companies have for years been allowed to just mine your behavior and your attention freely and make tons of money off of it and leaving a trail of you know, people whose autonomy was under attack, who really have lost some agency in their lives because of this stuff. And this jury of everyday people said, that's not okay. And, you know, we're going to see lots of appeals, and this isn't settled by any means, but just the idea that I just feel like I and so many people like me, I'm not saying I'm the only one, but you know, people in my world, we've been shouting into the void for a long time.
Yep, so have we, buddy. So have we. That was on TikTok at By Jake Ward. Jacob Ward.
I want to make a massive announcement right now. I mean, this is just bonker town. What it does is just... I feel 20 years younger. I'm not kidding you. Ultra Methylene Blue. Blue.
I know. I love it. This stuff works, man.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I mean, this is just bonker town.
I know. I love it.
I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Ultra Methylene Blue. 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 I just can't shut up about it. Up about it. Up about it. Up about it.
This stuff works, man.
Get yours now at thealexjonesstore.com. It is just beyond spectacular.
Dismantling the globalist agenda hour by hour. The War Room with Harrison Smith is live right now on X and Band.video worldwide.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You know, I was just thinking, as you may have heard, InfoWars will likely be shutting down soon and making way for something even better, more grand and more impactful. Shouldn't use that word. Ever since that caller told me I shouldn't use the word impactful, you've given me a condition. I can't say the word impactful without feeling like an idiot now, because we listen to our audience. We listen to you too much, probably. So now it's stuck in my head. So we're going to move on to something bigger and better. And I was thinking, you know, I don't know, legally we might not be able to use the names of our shows moving forward if we have to rename the show. Maybe the I Told You Show. Maybe that'd be a good name for this. Welcome to I Told You Show. Welcome to the I Told You Show. Just because we're right about everything and always are. And we have to remind people about that. I mean, who else has been talking about the deliberately addictive consequence of social media for the last 20, 30 years? I mean, it has been obvious for a very long time. And it used to just be like the article was always around, the one that talked about how the founder of Napster admitted, like, yeah, we rig people's dopamine, basically. And like, you have to understand what that means. That means they're hacking your chemicals. They're hacking your mind. They're hacking your hormones. It, just as efficiently as they could if they were to plug you into a Neuralink and just hit the dopamine, you know, receptor button to make you feel good, even though you shouldn't. That's what they do through social media. They have it programmed specifically, the sounds that it makes, the animations that happen when you get a like. I mean, it's all programmed specifically to keep you addicted on purpose, by design. They know exactly what they're doing. And this has been obvious forever. And so the latest court case, Meta and YouTube sickos deliberately harmed children. U.S. court has found that Meta and YouTube are deliberately getting kids addicted to their sites and causing them harm in the process. It's the latest sign that the tide is turning against the sick U.S. tech sector, which has enjoyed an ability to act without impunity for decades now. They mean with impunity. I'm sorry. This article is written by a leftist. They're not very smart. A Los Angeles jury has ordered YouTube and Meta pay $3 million to a woman who sued them, alleging that the negligence of both tech giants led to her getting addicted to their platforms at a young age. So obviously they don't care about a $3 million settlement, but they probably do care about the precedent this is setting. And I wonder if there's not going to be a class action case after this. The lawyers actually in this were shocked that they got the result that they did. I didn't bring it in, but there's a video of the lawyers afterwards saying, you know, normally cases like this take 3 or 4 times before we actually get a good result. The lawyers are like shocked. They're like, we did not expect to win this. We expected this to be a first step, knowing that we would have to come back and do it again and maybe a third time. That's like standard. When you're talking about an individual suing one of these big companies in sort of novel, you know, suit, you know, very sort of unprecedented type of suit. But the first time they succeeded, they did it and they got the result. And this has got to be shocking to Meta and Facebook. Again, $3 million is nothing to them. They've made it since this segment began, right? They don't care. But they do care if it's 100,000 people. They are going to care if the government steps in and forces them to stop making kids addicted. And there is a tightrope to walk here. There's a narrow path to take. You know, I know Alex was going off on this on his show today, and I totally agree. It's like, no, it's parents' responsibility. Your kid can't get addicted to YouTube if you don't let them. That's the choice of the parent. Really, the parent should be the one being sued by their children. Like, why did you let me go on YouTube? You should have known better. And this goes back to the idea of things like TikTok, where, you know, people would point out, they'd say, you know, the Chinese TikTok for kids, it shows them science experiments. It shows them crafts and art and crafts to do. It's building them up. It's intellectually stimulating to them. Whereas American TikTok, it's twerking videos and LGBT, like transgender crap. Like, it's all this poisonous stuff. And that's because in China, the government dictates what the people get to see. In America, you have to make that choice. The TikTok algorithm just gives you what you want. The incentive of TikTok is to show you things that keep you on the platform. So if you like watching twerking videos, that's what it's going to send you. If you instead are looking at woodworking videos, that's what they're going to send you. So unless you want the government coming in and dictating what they can and can't show you, that's up to us. It's up to you. This is the price of freedom. You have to actually have self-control. The price of freedom is you have to not give your kid a YouTube that's unrestricted and let them get addicted to it. Obviously, you idiots. You don't want the government having to step in and dictate this, especially not our government. Because say what you want about the Chinese, when they have control of a platform, they seem to be giving their people positive things. Obviously, they're going to silence anything that's against the Chinese government. But do you think our government would make the same choices that you would want them to make? Do you think if we actually were outraged about this and said, you know, the government has to step in and control the algorithms on social media to protect children? What do you think the mindset of the left in this country, the mindset of the powers that be in this country, what do they think is good for children versus not? To them, protecting children is like, we have to normalize transgender children. We have to make sure transgender children feel accepted. So we'll be pushing that propaganda to everybody constantly. And it's just like, this is not good. It's not good. So even if we had a beneficent, loving government, I wouldn't want them controlling our speech, obviously, but like, we don't even have that. We actually put the government in control of our speech, it would just be worse. Control of the algorithm, it's only going to be worse. I mean, hell, we at this point have made gigantic concessions to China in order to get them to sell TikTok. Is TikTok better? Is TikTok sending educational information to children? No, absolutely not. We agreed to take 600,000 Chinese students as part of a economic deal we have with China in which we force them to give up TikTok. Well, we didn't force it, like, we negotiated. Okay, we'll sell out our birthright, we'll sell out our university seats, we'll give them away to 600,000 communist infiltrators, but in return, you have to sell TikTok to Israel. Now, these are the deals dealmaker Trump is making. Literally, I mean, I'm like the only person that ever talks about this. I don't know why. It's like the craziest thing ever. We are taking on 600,000 Chinese students in return. Larry Ellison got to buy TikTok. Is he going to funnel educational information to your children? Absolutely not. He's going to censor any negative information about Israel, and the rest is going to stay the same. It was never about that. Just like Harvard hasn't gotten rid of their DEI stuff, even though we were told that was the reason that the president was fired. No, they just stopped people from protesting Palestine, and everything else stayed the same. They're still teaching courses about how evil whiteness is. So these are the actual motivations behind these actions. Selling TikTok was – getting TikTok away from China was never about stopping the Chinese from poisoning the minds of American children. They're only going to be poisoned just as much as ever. It's just you're not going to be able to talk about Israel. So that's where we're at. It's like you can either protect your children from these psychos that are trying to get them addicted to electronic stimuli, or you can have the government come in and dictate what your children can say, and that's only going to be worse. So there you go. Now I want to go to a video here. It's a longer video. I think I'll pause it, but I got to play the whole thing because the whole thing's important. And the interesting, the notable thing about this, I think, is, oh, wait, hold on. Before I do that, there's so much other stuff. I was saying that we're the We Told You show. The We Told You show, because there's a lot of stuff that we told you for a long time that is now, you know, you're being made aware of. That's one of them, right? The deliberately addictive attributes of social media. I mean, I used to say all the time, like, along with InfoWars, we should have, like, chemical wars, chem wars. But in understanding that they are literally, it's like they're tinkering in your brain. They are forcing your brain to release certain chemicals at certain times in order to manipulate your behavior. Do you understand how sophisticated that is and how they're actually literally hacking your brain waves when they do that? Might not feel like it because all you're doing is scrolling social media. But as you scroll social media, it's as if they have, forceps up your nose and plucking out pieces of your brain. But that's not the only thing that we, of course, have been proven incontrovertibly correct about now that we actually have the information to prove. And it's coming out for some reason, for some weird reason. Like you have the Telegraph saying this, quote, 6 years later, the true scale of the vaccine side effect is emerging. Side effects is emerging. Yet those coping with life-changing conditions remain ignored. Quote, my organs shut down. Now I'm in a wheelchair. The lives are ruined by COVID jabs. Okay. It's March 2026, and the Telegraph newspaper is writing stories about how the COVID jabs paralyzed people, shut their organs down, ruined their lives, and how they're not getting any help for it, even though they were forced to take it and it almost or actually did kill them. Meanwhile, 6 years ago, March 2020, the same news outlet was saying, quote, spreading anti-vax myths should be made a criminal offense. Now, I think what should be made a criminal offense was this attempt to stop people from getting the information that would have saved their lives from this. I think actually we need to go back in time. I think actually we need to look back at all the people saying that you're not allowed to criticize vaccinations. And I think they should be culpable for the damage that they did. They should be held as responsible for the life-altering and, in some cases, life-ending injuries that they are responsible for by silencing those of us, like me, who were telling you the whole time that the COVID jabs were dangerous and had severe side effects. When are we going to get justice for the litany of lies that have ruined not just millions of lives around the world? They've killed God only knows how many millions of people. And they destroyed our economy, and they gave mental illnesses to kids who were isolated for 2 years in their formative cycle. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy how right we are about everything. And it's crazy that the people who were wrong about absolutely everything seem to suffer severe amnesia when it comes to acknowledging that they were the ones who made this happen. They were the ones that caused the information landscape that allowed innocent people to have, let's read it again, their organs shut down. I told you so. We really did, folks. It's not just about, hey, you were right and I was wrong. It's like, hey, if we'd been listened to in the first place, lives would have been saved. Economies would have been saved. And like, and there's this one, right? I was talking about this earlier. It was a good thing that we took out Gaddafi. Gaddafi was an Islamist. We had to take him out. Really? Well, nearly 1 million migrants in Mediterranean route via Libya. The International Organization for Migration has reported there are nearly 1 million migrants currently residing in the North African state of Libya, many of whom will undoubtedly attempt to cross the Mediterranean and reach European soil. According to the EU-funded Info Migrants website, the IOM's Displacement Tracking Matrix program in Libya identified nearly 1 million migrants living within Libya as of the end of 2025, the largest figure on record. It's only becoming more. Again, if you want to say that we're on the Muslim side, we're on the Islamist side because we're saying that we shouldn't go to these just utterly retarded wars in the Middle East. No, you're on the Muslim side, my friend. You are on the extremist side. I can only think that you are some sort of agent for China and radical Islam because everything you support directly benefits them and harms America. What else are we supposed to think? So if you want to support us in our mission to be right about everything all the time, you can go to thealexjonesstore.com, and you should. There is a $600 value Faraday bag filled with not just incredible supplements, but a very big knife and some very cool clothes like the America First t-shirt. It's the America First Faraday badge, just filled with other products like the tactical trench knife, the t-shirt, MK Ultra plus atomic defense, Shilajit gummies plus Shilajit complex capsules, CMOS gummies and CMOS capsules plus Warcry premium smelling salts. It's over $600 worth of product. You're getting it for under $250. VIP members can get it for under $200. You are getting $600 worth of product for less than $200 if you're a VIP member at thealexjonesstore.com. Plus, if you're a VIP member, you're getting $10 anyway, right? The VIP subscription costs $30, but you get $40 to spend at the store. So really, you're paying even less and getting even more. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison right now to grab yours while supplies last. They're the Alex Jones signature Faraday bag bundle. And honestly, the Faraday bag itself is worth the full price, but we jam it full of the trench knife, the t-shirt, and all the supplements. You can also get a limited edition InfoWars t-shirt. That's the very cool shirt that can only be gotten by ordering a product now and getting it for free. You can't actually buy this t-shirt. And by the way, it's the last month probably that you'll ever be able to buy InfoWars stuff. So stock up now, put it away, and sell it, you know, for a profit later. Just go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison when you do. And of course, this is today and tomorrow, the final days to enter to win both the truck and the Shelby Mustang GT500. You are entered to win both of those. Every dollar you spend gets you 100 times entries. Plus, you can win $20,000. Somebody's got to win it. Why not you? Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Let them know who sent you. Win a car. Get a Faraday bag. It really make like the best present ever. That Faraday. Like if you know somebody that's got a birthday coming up, they'll be very happy with the Faraday bag full of stuff. Tell you what you can do is buy the bundle, keep all the stuff, and give them the Faraday bag as the present. That's a tricky way to get some for yourself and for them. But they really are fantastic products, and of course, they keep us on the air. Now, I've rambled too much to even go to this video I was going to go to, so we'll save that for the next segment. And instead, I want to go to clip 20 here because this is another very important video that I think we all need to see. It's about the family history of Gavin Newsom. This is like a video version of my favorite game, Wikipedia Hopscotch. It's just like, who's their parents? What did their parents do? Who were they involved with? And suddenly, what's illustrated is this giant constellation of corruption and criminality that has, it's basically a very small cabal that has utterly destroyed California over the last couple decades. And they all champion Gavin Newsom. Let's go to clip 20 here. This is Gavin Newsom's family history. Let's watch.
Okay, this is going to be really fun. The real origin story of Gavin Newsom, who all the papers are telling us is the Democrat frontrunner in 2028. Okay, so it starts with his granddad, who was born a son of an immigrant in 1902. Gavin's granddad becomes a protege of the political boss Bill Malone in San Francisco. This guy, who is head of the California Democratic Party and controls all of the federal cushy jobs that can be given out. Then Gavin's granddad runs a campaign for Pat Brown to become district attorney. Pat Brown later becomes governor. And then as governor, Pat Brown sets up this new Olympic resort for winter skiing and gives Gavin's granddad and his business partner, John Pelosi, the contract to run the ski resort. John Pelosi's son, Paul, marries Nancy. So the Newsoms and Pelosi's been knowing each other for a long time. Here's Gavin's sister with the dad. Okay, here's Gavin's dad. He later becomes a judge. But probably most importantly, he was super tight with the Getty family. An American dynasty comes from oil. They're in media, many billionaires. And Gordon Getty was Gavin's dad's best friend. He's worth like $5.5 billion. Gavin's dad and Gordon met in college. And right after college, Gavin's dad goes to work with the Getty family. One of the first things the Getty family does is his friend Gordon puts him on one of their company's boards. And then Gavin's dad goes to Europe to try to get them business. And this guy serves as the partner for Gavin's dad in Europe to make introductions. And if you look him up, he has a very interesting past. But anyway,
he was a Nazi.
So another thing that happens is that one of Gavin's dad's best friend's family members, John Paul Getty III, is kidnapped by the Italian mafia. And the granddad finally agrees to pay his ransom. So Gavin's dad goes to Italy with $3.2 million in cash and gives it to them. And remember, Jerry Brown is governor, who is Gavin's granddad's buddy. And then Jerry Brown gives Gavin's dad a judgeship. So the Gettys, Jerry Brown, Gavin Newsom, they're all homies. And Jerry Brown was like a super powerful California governor. Then Gavin's dad retires and becomes basically the head of the Getty family finances. Convenient, because Gavin goes into business with Billy Getty, who is a young Getty. Now Newsom starts 11 businesses, mostly like restaurants. Gordon, so his dad's best friend, is the lead investor. They're basically real estate deals. And Gavin is like partying in San Francisco in all his restaurants. He becomes friends with the Pritzker family, who later goes on to fund them because one of the Pritzkers had moved to San Francisco. This guy. Then Gavin's dad reaches out to a young Willie Brown and says Gavin can raise you money because Gavin's got the restaurants. Willie Brown is a powerful San Francisco mayor. And Willie Brown is like, hey, Gavin, you do a pretty good job of raising me money. I'm going to put you on the Parking and Traffic Commission. Oh, and now a seat's open. I'm going to put you on the Board of Supervisors. And now Gavin Newsom's political career is launched. What do you think?
Yeah, it's all corrupt. It's a big club and you ain't in it, folks. And of course, the Pritzkers got their greasy mitts all over it as well. There's some other stories. I mean, the Democrats, I don't know. I mean, we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? The GOP seems deliberately destroying the chances of the Republicans and yet, you know, blackmailing us essentially into voting for them. And that's how it feels to me. I don't know how anybody else is feeling, but basically we've gotten nothing from Trump, other than the January 6th pardons, which were good and I'll never complain about. But other than that, we've gotten the Iran war. We've gotten a bunch of anti-Semitism laws, like no mass deportations. Trump at this point has deported like half as many people as Obama deported during his administration. So we're not getting anything that we want, but we're being told we have to vote for the Republicans because the Democrats are so bad. I agree. The Democrats are just absolutely terrible. They're just unsalvageable most of the time. But you have to give us a reason to vote for you. But you can't just say those guys are worse. We're getting nothing from Republicans. And frankly, it's insulting that you think you can demand loyalty when you give nothing in return. Why would we go along with that? The only reason is because the Democrats really are just that awful. But I don't know. Maybe they would have kept us out of war in the Middle East. Maybe that would have changed things. But the Republicans, again, are just, they seem to be deliberately trying to drive away a bunch of GOP voters, including firing or allowing basically everybody who was good to quit. Let's go to clip 56 here really quickly. The crowd at CPAC, this is how they feel about Greg Bovino, who was just fired because he wanted deportations. Let's watch.
I would love to, and since we are talking about the border right now, and I believe we have a special guest very briefly backstage, I would like to welcome out onto the stage our retiring Border Patrol Chief, Greg Bovino, who's here right now.
And massive applause, standing ovation. It goes on for several minutes. And MAGA just dumped this guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, this broadcast is funded by you. I am not funded by the Israelis, the Russians, the Iranians, the Qataris, the Democrats, the Republicans, any NGOs, any of that. I'm funded by the few sponsors we have that are amazing, like Kirk Elliott Precious Metals, and our supplements, t-shirts, great knives, you name it. Everything we sell is something I think's cool, that I think's great, that works really well. And I'm here to tell you folks that supplements are one of the fastest growing industries the last 30 years. Go to Whole Foods, go anywhere, it's like it just gets bigger and bigger because they work. There's a lot of great stuff at Whole Foods or GNC. But what we sell is the creme de la creme at prices way lower than you can get the exact same thing at Whole Foods, because most of what we have is just private labeled of already a top brand. I don't reinvent the wheel. When something's got top ratings, totally tested, 5 stars, we can private label it. Baby, we just slap our name on it and sell it to you at a discount. But some of the stuff, like T3, is the only true atomic iodine. And I didn't mean it's radioactive. It's on the atomic table. It's the good halogen, the opposite of fluoride. You have to have a DEA license to manufacture this. Nobody does it but us. It takes up to 8 weeks to make it. It's made in Arizona. This is the same as X2, but even stronger. It's a patented process. T3 iodine is now available at thealexshowstore.com. And we have a flash sale that's only going until tomorrow night at midnight Central Time. 1 a.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. Mountain, 10 p.m. Pacific. And that is the two awesome vehicles. One of the offers is ending. The new one started this week. So you can get put in to the raffle 500 entries. Excuse me. You can put in 100 entries. It's normally just 5 entries for everything you buy in the store each time, for the raffle to be able to get the Ford Mustang Shelby GT500 and the 2025 Ford Raptor plus $20,000 in cash. Normally, each thing you buy, each time you're on the store, you get 5X entry into the lottery. This to the raffle, this is 100X until midnight Central tomorrow. So take advantage of that. But even cooler is the backpack Faraday bag. They only got a limited number of these 5-6 months ago. They sold out in 1 day. They got a lot more this time, but it's still a limited run. I bet this is sold out in less than a week. It is a beautiful backpack with all these inner pockets and zippers. It's just amazing. I bought a similar bag for over $500 years ago. This is amazing. It protects your phones, your laptops, your iPads from being tracked. When you don't have them in these, everywhere you go, you're being tracked by private corporations, criminals, government, you name it. Plus, if there's an EMP blast, you name it, it protects what you've got. So you want to keep stuff in your house that you'll save from that. It's also great to do that. And it comes with a whole bunch of free gifts inside of it, because these bags are usually, you know, over $500. It's a $600 value. You get it for $249 if you're a VIP member, $199. And you get an America First Faraday bag, America First Tactical Trench Knife, America First Limited Edition T-shirt, MK Ultra Atomic Defense Brain Boosters and Immune Boosting Shilajit Gummies and Capsules, CMOS Gummies and Capsules. That's 2 bottles. Each War Cry Premium Smelling Salts and so much more in the bag. Get it now at TheAlexShowStore.com and keep us on the air. Plus, these are great products.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
You're watching the I Told You Show with Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I like it. I like it. It works. The I Told You Show. The We Told You Show. Should be we. The We Told You Show. I think it could work. We should take suggestions for what our name should be if we have to change it. Welcome back, folks. This is The War Room, a.k.a. The We Told You Show. And, yeah, this is a big I Told You So moment. And I'm going to play this video now. It is a Irish socialist. Well, it's a foreigner in Ireland who's a socialist. And it's really an amazing speech that he gives, because it lays bare the hypocrisy and inconsistency at the heart of the entire quote unquote socialist movement right now. And it's funny to see sort of how he contends with it. And I may just let this play. I may interrupt, but I just want you to look out for the phenomenon that you're about to see here, which is that despite basically what he's saying is that the socialists have abandoned working class people. And he's right. But as he's talking about it, notice how he never, even though he's saying this, even though he's saying they should be more associated with the working class, and he's talking about how they've abandoned the working class, you know, concerns. Notice how he never once treats the quote unquote working class like human beings that actually have genuine concerns. It's all about we have to capture the working class. We aren't appealing to the working class in the right way in order to get them on our side. It's never actually genuine concern about the working class or the problems that they face. It's entirely about the political advantage that they can enjoy if they pretend to care about the middle, the you know, lower classes and white people more. But this, of course, is completely at odds with the reality of socialism, which is that it's pretty much strictly and has always strictly been just a war against Western civilization at its foundation. And of course, that means white people. So it doesn't work because the lower classes that he claims to be representative of are despised because they're the wrong race. Okay. Ireland may be the best place to explain this because obviously you can't say, well, but they're a colony and we're all illegal immigrants or we're all immigrants in America or whatever. It's like, well, Ireland has only ever been the subject of imperialism. It's only ever been the subject of colonization. It's only ever been a outspoken supporter of very unpopular worldwide minority movements like the movement to free Palestine. Ireland's always been, you know, on the side of the Palestinians in that because they know how it feels from their relationship with England. So I'm going to go to this video, the socialist explaining why socialism is utterly retarded. Let's watch.
Chamber, the very fact that this event is being organized is indicative of the fact that something new is struggling to emerge on the left. We all remember how this debate started. In April 2025, there was an anti-immigration march of 10,000 people down O'Connell Street, which was counter-protested by about 200 left-wing activists. The class disparity was obvious. On one side stood our leftists, primarily composed of students and party activists. And on the other side stood members of the working class. The socialist left, led by the Trotskyite parties, People Before Profit, and the Socialist Party, could think of nothing better to do than to shout, "Nazis come off our streets at them." And alongside them stood the liberal left, doing the exact same thing. The liberal left, Labour, a party which implemented austerity. The Greens, a party which implemented austerity. Sinn Féin, a party which is currently implementing austerity up in the north. And the Social Democrats, a party which loves the European Union, which implemented austerity in the 2010s and forced it on all of our nations. This is like in the folktale. The emperor can walk around naked all he likes, but eventually someone will stand up from the crowd and declare that he has no clothes. We have lost the support of the working class, and we have resorted to moralistic finger-wagging against the very people who we are supposed to represent, side by side with liberals. I am addressing this speech to the socialist left. We and the socialist left are losing the support of the working class because we prioritize alliances with liberals over sustained class organizing. Working class communities have been fucked over by the liberal left countless of times. Why are we seen as standing with them? This is why working class anger is being captured by the right. We are no longer speaking with our class. We are speaking over them. Perhaps we are too moralizing in tone, too focused on purity. Perhaps we are too quick to judge dissent as the enemy. These anti-immigration protests express a deep dissatisfaction in the working class, which goes beyond the simplistic explanation that these people are just all racists. In fact, no reasonable person would be happy with how the state is handling migration and with the IPAS system. Not locals, not asylum seekers. The state comes in, takes away a hotel from a community, hands it over to a corporate landlord, who then profiteers from it. Asylum seekers are dumped into communities with little to no planning, putting strain on public services and putting the asylum seekers themselves into terrible conditions. The socialist left rushes to defend the IPAS system, but this defends neither asylum seekers nor the Irish working class. In fact, it defends the government. And when working class people ask people before Profit and the Socialist Party about migration, all they can muster up is open borders, a wholly impractical idea which has never been implemented. And when in the Dáil a motion was raised to require community impact assessments for IPAS centers before they are put in an area, and these areas tend to be mostly working class areas, PBP and the Socialist Party voted with the government to shut down that motion. And why are they put in working class areas? Because when Dublin IV objects, the government listens. So it seems that landlords are bad, except IPAS landlords. But this is not a fluke. Rather, it expresses a very shift in the social base, in the class basis of the socialist left. They pander to middle and upper class progressives, a far cry from the days of the water charges movement. They have been captured by the liberal mainstream. What better example of this than United Against Racism, a PBP front group literally designed to make it so that socialist groups can stand side by side with liberal parties and recruit from therein, therefore further shifting the class basis to upper and middle class progressives. It is in their interest to fight imaginary hordes of fascists, to brand all those 10,000 people as fascists, because that drives recruitment and that drives engagement with their anti-fascist fronts or whatever they have. Right? This is also the same reason why PVP and the Socialist Party advocate less and less for leaving the European Union, why they prefer to talk of taxing the rich in the Dáil rather than socialist revolution, why they oppose hate speech legislation only on paper but never in practice, that hate speech legislation would hurt the working class, why they are opposed to nationalism, why they abandoned flying the tricolor and gave it all away to right-wing agitators by refusing to fly the tricolor, our national flag. Can we really be surprised then that members of the working class call these parties globalists or whatever other terms they use? In fact, perhaps not in word, but in deed, the revolutionary socialists, the socialist left, no longer believes in the primacy of the working class as agents of revolutionary change. They seek alliances with liberal progressives in the student movement, the anti-racism movement, the feminist movement, and there's nothing wrong with that, but they do so in a way that they don't connect it to class. They abandon class. And furthermore, they jump from issue to issue based on whatever is the most popular at the current moment, rather than consistently organizing in working class communities. I will now quote from an internal debate between the Socialist Party and ROSA and its former international organization, the Committee for a Workers' International, in 2019. In our view, a tendency has developed of some leading Irish comrades to see our struggles through the prism of the women's movement rather than seeing how it interconnects with with other struggles. In each of these movements, there are opportunist pressures to abandon class for identity. This leads to more recruitment from liberals and an electoral result from a liberal basis, but not from a working class basis, not from that stratum of society. The Socialist Party organizes protests against the abstract concept of the manosphere, but when is the last time that they talked about childcare and working mothers? The last time they did so was in 2023 in an article. We are now in a situation where the demands of the left are not being met on housing, healthcare, cost of living, and so on. We do not have leverage. We can no longer mobilize the working class. The socialist left is polling at 3%. We need a shift back to the primacy of class. Class struggle is at Coolock, at City West, at East Wall, in these communities. Lead them or they will be led by right-wing agitators. And if you can no longer lead them, stand aside and let us lead. Let us lead by example in our communities in all the ways that the official left is failing to do so. Thank you.
All right, so that's the speech. I mean, honestly, it's just kind of funny to me because it just reveals how utterly incoherent their entire, I guess, so-called philosophy is. I mean, it's what actually happened was that in order to implement communism, you had to tear down the pre-existing structure. Didn't matter how the structure was torn down. The structure had to be torn down. In Europe, in Russia, in the old world, this looks good. Looks really good. The I Told You Show. I like it. It worked. Class worked because there were entrenched class structures in Europe at the time and in Russia at the time. That meant if you were a peasant, you were going to die a peasant. If you were born a peasant, you were going to die a peasant. If you were born a noble, you're going to die a noble. And there was that hardened class system that made it easy for them to activate all those lower classes. They were more numerous, and while they may not have had the puppet strings in their hands, they, had enough influence that they could do a ground-up revolution and overthrow the elite. They had to change that tactic because America didn't have that problem and doesn't have that problem. We don't really have a major class issue in America. At least we haven't. And in any way that we are now having a class issue, it's because of the socialist programs that have caused the massive, widening gap of inequality, which has only increased over time as we've only gotten more liberal, as happens every single time. Socialists get into power, promising to uplift the poor, when in reality the poor get poorer and the richer get richer every single time. It never changes. So they determined that America couldn't be appealed to like Europe could because we don't have a class system. And I've referenced it many times before, but there's a book about a sort of Robin Hood-esque figure in the Sicilian mafia in the 1930s when there were clashes between communists and fascists. And he's saying, he's like, it's the argument I always make, right? When you see these young Americans crying because they will never own a home and their job doesn't pay enough to pay their rent. And I go, look, you have to deal with this. You have to actually be aware of these concerns and offer them a solution, or else they're going to go with the only people who are offering them solutions, which are the socialists and the communists. Same thing was happening in Italy in the 30s. You had a bunch of poor people that were struggling and needed help, and the people in power were saying, screw you, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. And the communists were saying, hey, we'll help you. We'll help you get more. We'll take stuff from them and give it to you. And so the main character of this, the Robin Hood sort of character in the Sicilian mafia, is saying, I get it. The communists are the only ones that show concern for the lower class. They're the only ones that tell the lower class that they have a way to break out of the class system. The communists are making that argument. Nobody else is. That's why people are going to the communists. But then he says, accept America. Except America is the other option. There's two options to break the class system that was entrenched in Europe. It was either revolutionary communism, where you overthrow everything and everything gets significantly worse. Or you can come to America, where there are no class systems. And if you're a hard worker, if you're smart, if you're a good person, you could be a millionaire. There's nothing stopping you. So, that's where we're at now, where the socialists are the only one making the argument. But the reality is, all this is to say that the class division didn't work in America. So they decided to go with race. They decided to go with identity. Now this is, I guess, they're realizing this maybe wasn't the best thing to do because they rely on, lower classes, working class people, and the frustration they have and wanting more. And they, need to use that suffering of the lower class to get political power. Only you can't do that if you hate white people. Only if you're in Ireland, the lower class people are all white. So, that doesn't really work with the whole identity politics, colonizer versus colonist. The whole thing is the oppressor versus the oppressed. And in Europe, it was the class system. The upper classes, the bourgeoisie, they're the oppressors, and the proletariat, they're the oppressed. And America didn't work that way. So it became the white people are the oppressors, the non-white people are the oppressed. And now they're finding out, that doesn't really work in Ireland. And it's not that, again, the way he presents it almost as if it's like a misfiring of messaging, or they just aren't doing enough outreach. But it's no, your entire political philosophy is internally inconsistent. It doesn't make any sense. Do you think I'm surprised that, when he describes it at the very beginning, he says this all started because there was a big anti-immigration march and we counter-protested it, calling them all Nazis. And it's that's not inconsistent with your beliefs. That's actually the core of your beliefs, is all of these Irish people who never did anything to anybody, don't deserve to be displaced from their own homes, certainly don't deserve to have, you know, barracks full of adult Afghans planted next to their elementary schools. In the old construction of communism, you'd be able to champion those people. Nowadays, he's like, why are we teamed up with the liberal left? I mean, because you're both retards. I don't know. It's like, no, you both just hate white people and want to destroy them, which doesn't sit very well with the white poor people. What do you not understand about that? And he's like upset. He's like, we've abandoned the tricolor, right? Their flag, the national flag. Like, why are we at odds with nationalism? Because nationalism is diametrically opposed to everything you believe, obviously. And this is the thing. He realizes that by basically demonizing the nation, demonizing white people, demonizing Europe and their history, they are ceding the ground to people that are actually patriotic, ceding the ground to people that actually have genuine love for these nations and the people that make up the nations. He's not actually concerned about the fact that their belief systems are at odds with the desires of the people on the ground. It's all just like, how do we manipulate people to be on our side? You know, we should be flying the flag, not because we actually understand that nationalism is important and national, you know, power is the way in which people protect themselves from outside forces. Like, there's no reconstruction of his political philosophy to therefore incorporate nationalism. It's just like, we should be using the signals of nationalism. Otherwise, the real nationalists are going to capture these poor people that we want on our side. It's all just very cynical and transactional and inhuman, in my opinion. So it's this weird, that's what I thought was so fascinating about it. It was like, he gets it, but he doesn't get it. He can see just the bare minimum irony, hypocrisy of a bunch of working class people being yelled at by a bunch of rich so-called communists, so-called socialists, the champagne socialists, demonizing and hating working class people for being like, I don't want my neighborhood to go away. But it never goes to the point of like, oh, we're the bad guys. Like, what he should be saying is like, I've come to the realization that we are actually the bad guys. We're on the wrong side of every, you know, issue. That the asylum program isn't about helping asylum seekers. It's not about helping the Irish. It's about hurting the Irish and enriching the elite class and using the immigrants as biological weapons against the hated white people. And that's wrong and bad and sick and evil. And we shouldn't be doing that. We should be on the side of the Irish people and protecting their homelands. He's not ever going to make that leap. It's not ever going to get there. It's all about the revolutionary global struggle. Our struggle. What struggle? There is no struggle. You're some foreigner in Ireland dictating policy to them. Like, it's all just so cringy and pathetic and gay. And he's talking about how the socialists and the leftists team up to stop community impact surveys from being done. Deliberately, not just like doing something against the working class, actively silencing and ignoring the working class, because you already know how they're going to feel about it. You know what I mean? If they actually thought they were helping anybody, what's the danger of a community impact survey? Community impact survey is when you go in and you ask the people in the community, how would you feel if a migrant center was placed here? What would be the effects economically of this area if there were to be an influx of 500 adult men from Africa? What would be the impact and how would the people on the ground feel about that? If what you were doing was good, if what you were doing was beneficial at all for the people that live there, you'd be happy to do a community impact survey. If it was beneficial, even in the slightest, you'd be able to go and say, hey, look, we're going to plant this thing here. You're going to have 500 new customers for your stores, 500 new workers to hire. You're going to get government grants and you can get a job at the place and it's going to be a community building exercise. And you could convince people that this was good for them and they'd go along with it. They don't even do the survey because they know before they ever do it that it's negative, that the people don't want it. They vote against the survey because the people don't want it and because they want to impose something on the people that they're against, because they don't care about the people. They don't like the people. They hate the people and are trying to destroy them. Duh. So it's like, as a socialist, as he's recognizing this inconsistency that, like, wow, all of our programs are aimed at viciously attacking the very people we claim to be supporting. Isn't that kind of weird? Isn't that kind of strange how that works? It's not possible to both be a socialist and adopt concern for the Irish people, concern for the lower class Americans, concern for the lower class people of the United Kingdom. And also, like, you can't, like, embrace nationalism and embrace, like, the things that these countries actually believe and still be a socialist. You have to be one or the other. This guy is, like, realizing that if you actually think about it, everything that they support is just bad. It's just bad for the people involved. It's bad for their own stated purpose of existing as socialists, of wanting to bring about equality. It doesn't do that. It does the opposite. So it's like you have to now abandon that political philosophy. If you recognize that it is diametrically opposed to all of your beliefs, there's no reforming that. You're resisting an awakening, right? What you should be saying is, oh, okay, the conservatives were right. The nationalists were right. Socialism is a poison. It is damaging everything. It does hijack legitimate concerns from people that really could use help and representation. And it twists it into their destruction. Wow, I guess we're the bad guys. I guess we're evil. I guess we actually cared about anybody ever, then we wouldn't be supporting their deliberate dislocation and replacement. Duh. So it's just fascinating seeing this, like, getting so damn close to waking up. Getting so free. I mean, he walks to the cave door, pokes his head out, and then comes back in. And it's just like, okay, all right. Some people are going to make that choice and there's nothing we can do about it. He's like, when's the last time we talked about childcare and working mothers? It's like, when was the last time you talked about them or last time you championed them? You talk about them all the time. You talk about how it's evil for white people to have children. You talk about how motherhood is a trap and it's enslavement and, it's evil and it has to be destroyed. You talk about it all the time. You hate it. You hate things that are good and natural and loving and beneficial for humanity. Those are the things that socialists always hate all the time. So are you surprised? Are you surprised at any of this? I didn't even get to. Oh, let me just do this. All right. We got a minute. This is perfect. A new study shows that average Somali immigrants to Finland come with a lifetime fiscal burden of nearly €1 million. €951,000 is what every Somali immigrant to Finland costs. The native Finn contributes an average of €3,400, meaning that for every one Somali immigrant brought into Finland, 280 Finnish taxpayers are required to cover the lifetime fiscal cost of one Somali. For every one Somali you bring in, you need 280 Finnish people giving all of their tax money directly to that Somali because they hate them and are trying to destroy the Finns.
So, CIA declassified documents last week, Operation Artichoke, to poison vaccines, food supply, and the water to dumb us down and make us controllable. Now, new documents about ESP control, how we're really electrochemical systems, liquid crystals, and the pineal gland, and how most people have microscopic to actual large worm infestations, not just from cats, you name it, like Kennedy has one in his brain, and they didn't tell the public most cancer, breast cancer, brain cancer is worms. Ladies and gentlemen, you can look it up, go to the UN's own website, they admit it. Over 2 billion people have cognitive disabilities because they do not have enough iodine. In the 20s, they found this out, put in the salt. IQs went up about 20 points on average, 15, 20 points. Well, we have the very best atomic iodine in the world. Has been available in several years, ladies and gentlemen. But we have the original X2 back, but even stronger. Pure atomic. Atomic isn't radioactive. It means it's on the periodic table. It is absolutely pure. And I mix that with ultra methylene blue that is also on record good for your pineal gland and reversing the calcification, the rest of it. Well, we've got the best methylene blue, and I just mixed the iodine with the methylene blue with this water. I'm going to drink this, and this is pure rocket fuel. So good for your body. Essential iodine with methylene blue together is amazing. Pretty scary looking, too. So, by the way, the new product is supposed to be available right now at thealexjonesshow.com, is T3. It's X2 back even better at thealexjonesstore.com. So for all the fans that wanted it, everybody that wanted to get it, we have had it for over a year. It is back, reborn, like the Phoenix, even stronger, exclusively available through our sponsor, thealexjonesstore.com. But regardless, our methylene blue, our iodine is the best, and it does so many other things, libido, stamina, energy, and they go together like a horse and carriage. Get them both now. There's also another big sale as well at thealexjonesstore.com, and I thank you for your support.